For August 16th, 2013, we talk about The Last of Us. Welcome to A Bonus Level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level, and this is a very special bonus level dedicated to talking about The Last of Us. I'm super excited to do this. I just recently beat the game. I thank you guys for your patience and waiting for me to to cross the finish line, especially you, Ben. But I did that thing that I usually do where I play the first, 2 hours of a game and then wait 2 months and then play through the rest of it in, two sittings. So
that's the same experience I had, but just, dilated, replace weeks with days, and that's kind of how it was for me.
Yeah, yeah. It's not that it didn't grab me, but yeah. So for the ground rules on this, we're not going to be, workmanlike or laborious in talking about every individual twist and turn of the plot. We're going to kind of stick to generalities as we move through the game. So, from the prologue up to the different kind of geographical locations that you hit, separated into the seasons, and then just kind of hitting the high points and talking about, general themes. And I imagine we'll spend a great deal of time on the ending. Just a warning, we are going to spoil this game dearly. So if you have not played nor finished the game, this podcast will be here when you're done, for when you get back. And we hope you enjoy it if you do. And come back.
Do yourself a favor and play the game before listening to this.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose
it's all aliens. Ah, got him.
It's kind of.
It was Earth all along.
I don't think they ever pretended. Oh, were you making a reference to the Simpsons? I hate every chimp I see. Yep. Man, that was such a good scene. Sorry, Troy McClure. God rest your soul, Phil Hartman. The Last of Us. It's survival horror, and I love that.
You like that?
No.
I'm not sure.
No.
And this is like survival in the terms of I found myself more consistently low on resources in this game than I do in most survival horror games.
Right.
Most other survival horror games, I should say.
It does a fantastic job of meeting out the resources at a rate that is consistent with what they expect you to do, but just enough to keep you really tense, right? So it's similar to Resident Evil 4 in that regard. In that they have some kind of algorithm that's working to give you just a little bit more than what you need, accounting for a margin of error, except it's less gun happy shoot than Resident Evil 4.
Yeah. So, and my experience might have been influenced by my playstyle. So, do you guys want to real quick just kind of say how you tended to go through the game? Like, were you primarily stealth? Were you pick people off from a distance? How did you approach things?
Go ahead, Ben.
I guess I would try and do stealth to a point. It was somewhat hard to. Because stealth is relying on being able to make shivs and stuff and be able to shiv the clickers if you needed to. And so if I was low on supplies, I would just have to bust out Molotovs, throw a rock, and then go to town. So
yeah. I played it just like I play any other kind of stealth game, which is as, a stealth opportunist. Like Ben said, playing sneaky up to a point, and then if I get caught, not being like damn it, and then restarting from the last save, and if I died, I would try and get up to or beyond that point. But if things went south, I generally found myself persisting through and kind of using that to create these awesome little combat situations. And of course, it changes up a little bit more, depending on what you're fighting. If it's if it's another survivor, or like Ben said, the clickers, which, man, we're going to talk about those clicker sequences. I love those so much. Mm-hmm. How about you, Dennis?
Similar to you guys, and I think the way you expressed it, Cole, is very unique in games, that the oops, I fucked up moment and the resulting gameplay is just as fun as the stealth leading up to it. Yeah. I wouldn't call myself a stealth opportunist because I don't think I ever went loud, so to speak, on purpose. Yeah. It was more, I hit a point where I screwed up or someone found me, and then I just entered this state of panic. where, you know, alluding to that scarcity I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. I would just very quickly blow through all my resources trying to get out alive. and I think I realized fairly quickly, that, you know, the game intends for you to do that to some extent.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I know some other friends who have played this game who got very frustrated early on because they thought that, you know, if you got caught in stealth, it meant you should reload.
That's no way to live.
You couldn't get anywhere that way. And they're like, dude, this game sucks.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no.
Well, the game gives you like really, really good tools, you know, to like to do that. It encourages stealth by making it, you know, kind of fun and intuitive. You know,
the game literally gives you tools as well.
Well, yeah. So I think I was referring specifically to kind of the listening mode, which is really cool. Like, I initially wrote it off as kind of, you know, Batman detective vision, like, oh man, that's not realistic. But then realizing that, like, oh, it's by sound. So if something was moving quickly, and, you know, eventually you start fighting human enemies that, you know, that are also trying to sneak around you, and then, like, oh, okay, so I can't see them if they're not making any noise, mm-hmm. and just kind of using that to get a lay of the land, worked really, really well for me.
Yeah, totally agree. There's many times where I would kind of be listening outside a door and be like, okay, I see one, I see two, and I've got the landscape. And then I walk through, and right on the other side of the door is a guy who's just kind of not moving. So
yeah.
Couldn't see him or mm-hmm. hear him, I guess.
Yeah. And I really dig the, you know, the distraction techniques that they give you too, the bottles and the bricks. Mm-hmm. I never noticed too much of a difference between using a bottle and a brick. Is it that a brick you can use to brain somebody and a bottle just stuns, or, like, did you guys suss that out?
Go ahead.
I think that's the difference, but
okay.
My assumption was always they were identical. At least that's the way I played it. So yeah. maybe I missed a nuance.
And it was never worthwhile to, like, throw it directly at somebody. It was always good to, you know, the best way to use those, in my experience, was to just lead them down a hallway so I could pass, you know?
Yeah.
It did give you, you know, like, if you didn't have it up to throw, like you didn't have L1 pressed and mm-hmm. someone was close enough to you, it would give you an auto target, which, you know, a lot of times that allowed you to go right in for the strangle. And if you had one enemy, that was really effective. But that's about the only time I did anything other than, like you said, throw it down a hallway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, you know, that successfully, you know, just stealth has been a really troubled mechanic in games. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of things that are doing it right, you know, here recently. And, you know, it's not that it's never been done right. It's just that if it's not the primary purpose of the game, it tends to get a little bit junky and cluttered. And in this one, they keep it real simple. You know, you play a game like Mark and the Ninja are Dishonored and you expect good stealth. This one, you know, survival horror has a really troubled relationship with a stealth mechanic, and it pulls it off very, very nicely.
Yeah.
So, do we want to kind of, like, get into the plot, see what happens here? Because we haven't really said who you are or what you're doing or what the world is like around you or commented on that.
Yeah, so technically, to this point, the game has been spoiler-free.
Yes.
Or the podcast has been.
Yeah, that's true.
So if you didn't listen to us before...
Warning. I'm not going to edit in a siren, but I will just make the siren noise now. Woo, woo. There we go.
Danger Will Robinson.
Yes. So, yeah, I love the way this game opens. One of the strongest openings in a game, like, outside of, like, Mass Effect 2 or, you know, Indigo Prophecy or something like that. Mm-hmm. Just playing as, you know, Joel's daughter.
Sarah, right?
Sarah, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's such a normal, you know, like, on, you know, I did speech and debate in high school, and they talk about, you know, if you really want to learn a character for speech, think about how they would eat breakfast or how mm-hmm. they would get out of the bed in the morning.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you're doing as Sarah.
Yeah. You know, she got him a birthday gift. It's his birthday. He's back from work. He's tired. You know, it's the two of them, you know, just existing on this special day, and it's real cool, right? Mm-hmm. And you get to go around their house. It's a nice house. You get a sense for who they are and what they're about. Mm-hmm. And this actually introduces two things that I really like about the game, and I might as well say it now. The music That awesome score. I really recommend if, you know, you go buy it because it's really good, like background ambient kind of music. yeah, the music, that awesome haunting acoustic guitar, real lonely kind of feel. It's almost like it was made specifically for me.
That's probably like the 40th time that you say a game's music was made specifically for you.
Yeah, but just I latch onto stuff, and there are certain tropes that, if evoked, will immediately engender affection from me. You know.
Yeah. You can't argue with the game's music. It's really, really good.
Yeah, and the editing. I've talked about this before, just like in kind of vague terms. But I love the way that it doesn't like do straight up like try and maintain continuity throughout. And I also like how they're not afraid to leave a little bit of space between sequences. By that I mean it's not always like splice cut, splice cut, splice cut. They will dip to black for a handful of frames and then cut up to the next one. And they do these awesome time skips by doing like jump cuts where the only thing that changes between them is the light. Like, especially as somebody is like sleeping or, you know, waiting for time to pass and things like that. And that happens here, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know.
So you wake up and you finally got control for the first time, because to this point what we've described is cutscene, essentially.
Yeah.
But it takes you a while to realize that it's a game and not a video.
Yeah.
And then it's real weird that Sarah controls like Nathan Drake. Just a little bit. Like, it is with that environment, it really threw me off. Yeah. But
how much time did you spend exploring the room before you ventured out?
Enough time. It's real neat because you hear the audio kind of describing what's happening from the TV in the next room over, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So picked up the birthday card and, you know, read a couple of notes, and those are awesome little details.
And things just kind of get more like, you wake up with this. I think it's the phone is ringing, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
and your brother is trying to get a hold of your dad, and you can't find your dad, and things just get increasingly uneasy.
Mm-hmm.
Until you're, you know, and you're kind of going around the house trying to find your dad until he bursts in through the front door.
Yeah,
or the back door, rather.
Well, yeah. All right. Yeah, I guess we're not doing a point by point of the game. So yeah.
No.
Well, no. If you want to talk about something, by all means.
Yeah, but go ahead.
No, there's no need to go through point by point.
Yeah.
But that's missing the point.
But this is establishing the setup that this is day zero, right? This is the infection has basically taken over all of Austin, Texas at this point. You know, mm-hmm. something terrible is happening. The city is burning, and basically you're being told you have to get out of here because people are going fucking nuts.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they went to Shaun of the Dead level of foreshadowing. So.
Yeah, well, Shaun of the Dead level of foreshadowing in that there was an article about an unexplained fungal infection in Uncharted 3.
Oh, yeah. I believe...
I forgot about that.
Did we talk about this at any point in time?
I don't believe we did. I read that somewhere on a site.
Yeah, in the bar in the opening scene. Yeah.
So Joel, you know, who's your dad, he ends up being the main character of the game. He's with his brother Tommy, and he throws you into the backseat of your car, and you're just trying to get out of the, you know, get into the city in order to, you know, seek shelter, right? Because
after having to kill, you know, watch your dad kill your neighbor.
Yeah, something like that. Because your neighbor like burst down the door and like ran in and was like going straight for Joel's throat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think go ahead.
It's amazing how many like things that they could do to develop characters just in the beginning scene.
Yeah,
like showing him shoot his neighbor without little hesitance, mm-hmm. and then him later also telling him to keep driving past the two survivors.
Yeah,
yeah,
around the road.
So mm-hmm. I bring up that shooting the neighbor because I think it sets up a theme that I saw repeated throughout the game, which is like in the moment it's not really a choice.
Right.
Like, yeah, you're right. He shot him with very little hesitation. And it really took me by surprise how little ceremony the mm-hmm. game gave to this first killing.
Yeah.
You know, like they didn't play it up. It was just this thing that happened in the moment because it had to. It almost felt like. And that much of the time in the game, I saw that expressed to the gameplay. Like, you know, I busted out the flamethrower and am burning people alive because I was out of ammo on everything else.
Right.
and that, you know, in the moment, it's not a choice. And I think Joel even says things to allude to that at the very end of the game.
Right.
It really struck me how well they weaved it throughout the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So right here, and the game kind of goes back and forth about the whole, you know, ceremony, no ceremony, like the you know, just the fact that this was all in engine and it didn't like do a zoom in as, you know, the head burst open or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they didn't
just
have
like,
the bat system.
Yeah, they didn't have the bat system, but like later on, you know, it's just kind of like the heads are, you know, water balloons filled with raspberry jam. You know,
yeah,
stuff like that.
This is true.
Yeah, and so like right here, where it's just like he puts two bullets in his head and he just kind of falls down and there's a little bit of blood. It's like, oh, that's serious and for real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's like Grand Theft Auto 4.
Pretty.
That's like the best game to do deaths.
Uh-huh.
Where
it's kind of like,
unsatisfying and little ceremony.
Yeah, loud noises and then somebody falls over.
Hmm.
But yeah. So let's talk about this infection because, or do we want to do that after the time break? Because right now it's left unexplained.
Yeah. Well, we can. I mean, you're trying to escape. You can't very well. And then talk about deaths with little ceremony. Yeah.
That
there was a little bit of ceremony.
Yeah, like it pulled up the music a little bit, and it was just kind of like no, checking, you know.
Unless you're talking about the two guys who were chasing Joel that got killed. Yeah.
No, I think, you know, yeah, I mean, it is an incredibly emotional scene.
Yeah.
But the fact that, you know, it's like, well, you know, it's they do the heroic dive behind the car and pull the daughter down at the last second, and then you look over and it's like, oh. Well, it doesn't work every time, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you get to see the emotional impact of that. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of that is a moment in an Uncharted game, mm-hmm. never would have happened 100% of the time in an Uncharted game. You know, the heroes dive out of the way, pull his daughter down, you know, mm-hmm. whatever, and the enemies might as well be firing blanks.
Yeah.
But here it is, one stray bullet is enough to just wreck this guy.
Yeah. And just the way that he, you know, says, you know, to Sarah, don't do this to me, baby. You know, just like I've got goosebumps on my scalp right now.
Yeah.
You know. So yeah, that kind of in a nutshell sets up who Joel is in this new world, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, he witnessed what you know how badly authority can fuck up. And, you know, he suffered a grave personal loss because of that.
Yeah. And I think just as important is the next section, which we'll talk about in a bit. But it sounds like, Ben, go ahead.
I was going to say, and he probably carries a lot of guilt as far as, like, what could I have done? I could have turned around earlier. You know, like, he probably, you know, like, has an enormous amount of guilt as far mm-hmm. as, or probably blames himself for his daughter dying.
Right.
Son, I've repressed more guilt than you've ever felt.
Is that what he says?
No, God, no. That's in the parody version I'm working on.
Okay, cool.
I think are we finished with the prologue? Because I think this leads really well into the quarantine.
Yeah, yeah. I think that we're done. So speaking to those time skips, 20 years is a hell of a time skip.
Yeah. Rip Van Winkle did.
Well, you look at something like The Walking Dead, and like over the course of the comic books, like only a year and a half has passed, and how drastically the world is just done for at that point, right? Then you look at this, like 20 years, like just like that is enough to tell you things did not get better and they have pretty much no hope of ever getting better.
Yeah.
And it's got kind of a shade of like Children of Men where like no kid has been born for 20 years. So there's like, you just get the sense that there's no hope for the human race anymore, even if they do pull out. Right.
Yeah, it's very much like a Children of Men / Half-Life 2 combination at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think this also really sets up Joel's character and Tess's too, who we meet, in that in the quarantine zone section, they are objectively bad people.
Right.
Like they
right.
do objectively bad things and unnecessarily bad things.
Yeah, they're gun runners, they're smugglers.
Yeah, you are not playing good guys. You're not even playing the charismatic good guys.
No.
Or bad guys, excuse me.
Right. They're just, it's, you know, I would say the banality of evil, but it's like if Han Solo had like a legit body count. and like wasn't not the roguish good looks. You're right. They're like, it's not really the charismatic thing or the somewhat justification. It's just they allude to this. You know, Joel later talks about his history as a hunter, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Tess says something like, "We're not good people," or something like that. Yeah, or maybe Joel might even say that. But
some of the dialogue in this is not that great. I can imagine them saying, "We're not the good guys." Like when we, it's like we got to save this girl. We're not the good guys. Well, you know.
Yeah.
But
what kind of game would it be if he's like, "Oh, right, sorry, okay, not going to do it," and then that was the end of the game.
cue the credits for Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Dun, 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 dun.
So did you guys watch the execution as you were going through that initial sequence?
No.
Not the first time.
Really? You just kept on walking?
Yeah, I listened to it. I figured that it was just there to be listened to. I didn't know that there was something I could look at.
Yeah, I thought it was just like a shakedown.
Yeah. But so you've gone from Austin to Boston. Major metropolitan centers have been sectioned off into quarantine zones because the world went to shit because they're of a fungal outbreak, the cordyceps, which is an actual thing. The game's premise was inspired by a section on planet Earth about a fungus that infects the brains of ants and then causes them to like go to high ground and then explode their head and spread the spores. So it is a legit concept that's also legitimately horrifying.
Yeah. And for as horrifying as that concept is, they are amazingly cavalier about the first time you encounter spores.
Right. It's just kind of like, ah, shit, spores. And then you put on your gas mask as you're trying to navigate these slums.
Yeah, which I guess for gameplay reasons they have to have a pretty clearly defined area. But had I lived in that world, I think I would suffocate myself because I'd be afraid to breathe.
Yeah, well they pretty much established that you can know and you can see. However, that is terrifying. That just there's something you can breathe that can mess you up.
Yeah,
just basically end your life. But I think that like the way that they introduce it is really neat though, because it's not like you would be walking by and somebody would say, "Oh, be careful not to breathe air that looks like this," because it's just a fact of life right now. This is why we're quarantined.
Well, so, and I thought it was going to be a gameplay mechanic of like, "Hey, you got to be careful and take your mask on and off." And it's, they don't even, give you the option. It's just like, it's become this fact of life that automatically happens.
Yeah. To be like, that would be like Metro, honestly. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Metro 2033 and Last Light make you do that.
Or isn't that a Fallout on like survival mode or hard mode?
I don't think so. Fallout New Vegas has the hardcore mode, but that really is, it just forces you to eat and drink.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. And so you're running guns. The first chapter kind of has you trying to settle a score with a particular, crime lord who is withholding cargo from you. And the game kind of cuts your teeth or lets you cut your teeth on, trying to fight, just human enemies, right? People who behave in a kind of predictable manner in combat. They're easy to stealth around. It gives you like these cargo yards to go through. And this was fine here. As a way to get you introduced to those things. I wasn't too huge of a fan of the combat in total until you get to like the clicker sections.
Yeah, the opening combat scene here with the couple of cargo yards felt like Uncharted without cover switching to me.
Right,
like it was Uncharted with a worse cover system. So I mean, I guess there was a slight stealth section where you snuck past the clickers and had the spores and everything.
Yeah.
But
did they introduce clickers at this point? Or is that not until later?
Not clickers, just infected people.
Just infected. Just the runners, yeah.
Yeah, the runners.
Recently infected people.
Yeah, yes. And that's an awesome concept, that the longer you're infected, the worse you get.
Yeah, that was really, the fourth stage was kind of cartoony to me, but
yeah,
it served its purpose.
It served its purpose as a boss.
Yeah, I felt in terms of, you know, the human combat element, which is distinctly different, the game kind of put its weakest foot forward.
Yeah, well, you're going up against people whose only verbs are run and shoot. Later, you find ones who are trying to outsmart you.
But yeah, like, flank and
just like
be scared. And
it didn't fulfill kind of on the promise that I wanted. Like the you know, it was just urban combat in an industrial area, which I couldn't care less about, honestly.
Which, again, maybe there was some intent there, and I'm reading things into this, but, you know, the banality of what you're doing for you after 20 years of this shit, you know, like, plug a couple more people, break some people's arms, and they're running away because they don't have any ammo, so I'm just going to walk up and plug in. Like, it feels as bland as to Joel, I'm guessing, as the level actually is to the gameplay.
Yeah. Ben, what did you think of the shooting?
I don't know. I mean, I remember not being too excited about the combat during the first pass through of Boston. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until you kind of get your feet wet with the stealth mechanics and like walking around and shivving people that I felt more comfortable with it. So yeah, I mean, I think the thing I was unimpressed with the first time through, but I kind of look back with better feelings is just like, yeah, like how an Uncharted has a similar beginning where, you know, like there's a crescendo opening and then there's like a cutscene to kind of explain what's happening, and then you have like your first mission. Like in Uncharted, it's something like, all right, let's have like a museum heist or something like that, and it's like, okay, that's kind of cool. And this one, it's like, hey, let's go pay back some guy for something that you don't know about, and it's like, oh, well, that's okay, all right, yeah, we can do that. But I mean, it ends up being a lot better because you know, yeah, it shouldn't be an exciting mission. It should it should be something that's petty, you know, because that's kind of who the people are right now.
Mm-hmm. You get to your target, and I forget his name because it is of no consequence. However, you find out that Les Resistance, the Fireflies, have actually gotten to him first and taken all of the guns that were promised to you.
Yep. So you brutalize him and kill him.
Because why not? Because you're not the good guys.
Tess, look how I'm not the good guy. See how not the good guy I'm being? she's actually the one who puts the bullet in his head.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we'll talk about their relationship as we kind of get to the next part here.
Yeah,
but
I wound up liking her a lot more than I thought I would.
Yeah, me too. Well, we can talk about it now. I mean, just like they hint at there being, you know, some romance there, but they don't play it up as not her sole purpose. They're partners. They're partners in crime, and that's a good dynamic. They didn't go the predictable route. They kept it with just tension and blah blah blah. But they are so far beyond that as people right now, right?
Yeah, they could have been brother and sister, I think, as easily as any sort of romantic entanglement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, so you meet up with the leader of the Fireflies and, you know, she says, hey, I've got something that you can do. And then you can have all the guns you want.
Well, first she says, hey, I've got a bullet in my side.
Yeah. So, I like how they bookend that too.
Yeah.
So she's trying to convey some precious cargo. She's like, okay, well, since I'm done for, essentially, I need you to do this. You don't know what the cargo is, but you follow her back to the hideout, and turns out it's a little girl.
Yes.
Yeah. So now the cover makes sense.
So now the cover...
halfway makes sense. Tess is still around.
That's true. Yeah. But you meet Ellie, and boy, is Ellie a good character.
Yes.
Yeah.
And boy, is her name close to Ellen, as in Ellen Page.
Yeah, as in that wasn't the actress who played that. Okay, so Joel is voiced by the same voice actor. This is not an original observation, but I need to say it, just because that's who I am. Joel is voiced by the same voice actor as, what's his name from Bioshock Infinite, the main character, Booker...
Booker DeWitt.
Yeah, Booker DeWitt. Welcome to it, yeah.
Oh.
So in that game, his partner was Elizabeth. Ellie is short for Elizabeth. I think that he just recorded the same lines for both of them, just to save on studio hours, and they just split them up.
Wait. Is Bioshock Infinite just The Last of Us with a different filter?
I think so.
They're very different games.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't even think I'm stepping out on a limb in that one.
Yes, I like Last of Us much more.
Actually, did you guys do a Bioshock Infinite bonus
level? I done fall off.
Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah. I done fall off. But yeah, Ellie is real good. She that's
in English.
No, I love the way that Ellie is written. Like written and acted just like superbly. I like that's the highlight of the content in this for me.
Yeah, yeah, they do a really good job with her. She feels I found myself starting to say, "Oh man," a lot more after having played this game. I'd be like, "Where the hell did that come? I didn't used to say that." And then I realized, "Oh, that's like the thing that Ellie says all the time." But it's not like a catchphrase. It's just like this, it's a very genuine thing that I just wandered its way into my vocabulary. So yeah.
like she swears and she kind of talks in a more like rough way than somebody who grew up in normal circumstances would, but it doesn't seem forced and it's not trying to be edgy. Like I too would call somebody a motherfucker as I jumped onto their back and started, you know, stabbing at their neck with a switchblade, you know?
Do you know this from experience?
I'm just saying, like, I would probably say something equal to or worse than motherfucker as I was stabbing somebody.
Yeah. I think the other nice thing about her is like, there are so many tropes you could fall into with, you know, the spunky girl character who's capable of more than you think. And they managed to avoid those tropes without falling into the trope of we're avoiding all these tropes or we're subverting.
Yeah.
So it doesn't feel like they're trying to subvert tropes. It doesn't feel like they're playing to tropes. It just feels like it's Ellie.
Yeah. And it even is kind of a cliche, you know, the whole idea that the pure young girl ends up being the key to the secret that can cure us all. You know, that part of the plot, I was like, when they revealed this, you know, as you and Tess, you know, Tess is convinced that, you know, just kind of like, hey, let's do this. Initially, she's in it for the money. But when you find out that she was bit, but not infected, essentially, so she's infected, but she's asymptomatic. You know, she ultimately goes like, oh, this is why the Fireflies want to, you know, get her out of the city and, you know, to their research facility, because she might be the cure. So Tess is a believer. Yeah. Right. But like when they revealed that, and the way that they do that is real cool, because you start fighting troops, you know,
trying to sneak out of the city.
Yeah. Yeah. As you're sneaking out of the city. That's real cool how they're just scanning people. Like, you know, it's kind of like, oh, you're on the border. Before we take you back in, we need to find out if you're infected or not. Oh, turns out she's got the spores. Oh, well. But then you get out. But I rolled my eyes because I went into this not knowing anything about the plot. Right. I was just kind of like, it would just be cool if it was two people, you know, who were very different just trying to survive. And I understand that this is a Hollywood movie kind of thing where they need to give some kind of grand world saving motivation, and they subvert it very neatly. But I was disappointed that was the direction they chose at the start.
Yeah, yeah. I would say that I was also not interested in the story that much in the first like quarter of the game, perhaps because I felt like it leaned too heavily on its references.
Yeah.
Children of Men and like The Road, you know.
Yeah, yeah. All of which are fine. I love each of those things.
Yeah.
You know, like when I'm describing this to people at work, I say, you know, it's The Stand meets The Road meets Children of Men meets something with fungus zombies.
Yeah, I think the thing is at the beginning it was just that, and by the end they kind of form it into their own story.
Yeah, at the end, you know, just like anything where it's, you know, a character study or, you know, like two people, it becomes incredibly small as these, you know, as you just kind of focus on the dynamic between these two people, right?
And we've complained plenty of times in the past about how video games have a chronic inability to stay small. And I mean, The Last of Us does it perfectly, but you know, they have this, you know, world level thing introduced right up front, and it's kind of there the whole game. And yeah, that's, you know, okay, gotcha. That's, you know, a pretty standard, but I think they realized that and didn't make a big deal out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excuse me.
He's got the fungus.
No, no, get him. Yeah. So around here is your first real. Exposure to the clickers, I think.
As you're leaving Boston, yeah.
Yeah, as you're leaving Boston. And this is the first really scary, this is your first really scary section of the game as, you know, you and Tess are trying to get out. It's nighttime, or you're far enough below the skyline that the sun isn't there, and you're going into the basement of the school building, you know, trying to find a way out. And, you know, you're fighting these clickers, and this is where stealth really, really is important, because they can't see, but oh boy, can they hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love the design on these guys. It's, you know, as scary as anything I've seen in Silent Hill. I like how you can tell that they're different people, you know, beneath this infection. But the idea is that they've been infected for so long, and because the cordyceps grow around the brain, you know, the fungus outgrows their skull, and so it starts popping out. It eats away at their eyes and face, but, you know, they're not any less hungry.
Yeah, and their face essentially
still have their mouth.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Their face is a big mushroom mask, right?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. And they,
which I, for some reason I read that was what they were using to kind of receive the clicker signal, because they hear through echolocation.
Yeah.
And that, I assumed that the face blooming head was like a radar dish or something.
Yeah, something like that. And it doesn't have to be entirely Pat, but boy does that work. So, you know, they kind of move around slowly. If they catch your scent, or, you know, if you make a noise, they will charge straight at you. And unless you have a shiv equipped, you're not able to break the, or no, you have to train that up too, don't you?
Yeah. That's one of the most expensive upgrades.
Yeah. So like if one gets near you, you're done, because they will just, you know, like tear away at your throat.
Yeah, you can fight them off if you have a board or a pipe.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you're just nothing that lasts very long.
Yeah. If they initiate their kill animation, that's it.
Yeah. Yes. And I think this game would have been a lot more frustrating for me had I not done the upgrade for shiv saves or whatever it's called. See, which, you want to talk about that upgrade system?
Yeah. So I never did that. So the idea is that you find pills. And those are your experience points. It's a nice way for them to reward exploration, because you can also upgrade your weapons at desks. You know, you're going to be exploring in order to find resources, but they put these kind of this second tier currency or higher tier currency behind, you know, more obscure areas. So when you find it, it really pays off. Like if you get like 20 pills, you're good. And you can invest in different things that will improve various aspects of the way you play. So I put all of my points into listen mode enhancements. Like I max that out first all the way,
because I did not even touch it.
Yeah, that gives you basically, you know, clairvoyance.
Interesting. Because it's funny that you completely ignored the thing that I considered essential, and I, like, didn't even touch this thing that you relied on.
Mm-hmm. What did you consider essential? What did you consider essential?
The shiv save.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I burned through shivs like a mother.
how about you, Ben?
I kind of upgraded everything a little bit at a time. So it would be like knock everything out of the first tier first and then work on the second tier and so on. So
did you make any meaningful progress down any particular skill path?
I know I didn't get to the end of the shiv skill tree, but I don't know. Personally, I didn't think that those were as great as the weapon upgrades. I preferred the weapon upgrades.
Yeah. But you're using different currencies for each, we should call out.
Yeah.
It's pills, and then it's like gears or something like that. Parts.
Yeah. Parts and tools.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're both different flavors of stuff that can help you. And it's really, like, none of them make or break anything. Like, they just shore up different areas where you may have weaknesses, right?
Yeah. And I'm going to complain about this first stealth encounter real quick.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It works perfectly in the rest of the game, you know, maintains this high level of quality until you get to the end. And the way out of this first area is a ladder that you have to pull down that is perched on top of a wall that is like completely hidden. Like you can see the gate, you can see that's the way to go, but this ladder is just so obscure, and it's like, hello, you could do at least one thing to point me towards it.
Yeah.
Because it's completely up out of your eyes, out of your kind of sight lines.
Where is this at?
So you're going through, it's dark, and it's your first kind of big room with clickers and runners where they kind of take the handcuffs off, and there's multiple different paths through the room. And I want to say it's like the it's either some kind of subway terminal or bus station type of deal.
Oh yeah, you're talking about the subway. It doesn't really matter too much because like thankfully if you're going up against the infected, they can't see your flashlight. But yeah,
I thought runners could.
No, they can't.
Oh, huh.
No, it's only people who can see your flashlight.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and the runners are not people. anymore. But yeah, you're right. They're like there are times in the stealth areas. So if you're in full daylight, they have the look at me colors, mm-hmm. Like anything yellow in this game, just that points you to the critical path, which is nice. However, in stealth, and that gets a little bit tiresome, especially as you get to some of the later settings, just kind of trying to find your way through these areas, getting those. And I got a little sick of how many ladders and planks I had to move. In fact, I just about tweeted the ladders of us.
Yeah. Oh, you should have. I would have appreciated that.
Yeah. Because it seemed like this really weird gating system and that they just put the ladders 10 feet away from this thing that lets you proceed. It's like, just don't make me solve a puzzle that's not a puzzle. The same thing with like any kind of gate where it's like, oh, I can't get over. And I was like, I can crawl through here. Okay, cool. Wait, she crawls through the other side, opens up. Okay, why did I do that? Why wasn't that door just open?
I think that's how they do their loading.
Okay. Yeah, that actually makes sense. And as I said that, I maybe 5% was on my way to that realization.
That's funny. With the I don't think it was that way with the plank puzzles or the ladder puzzles though.
But it's possible because
They did that in all the Uncharted's too, where it's like somebody will climb up something and then turn around and then pull you up. And I think that that's what they use as their loading time.
Yeah.
Essentially.
I could see that. I guess my complaint then would be the plank and ladder kind of functionality could make for some really interesting puzzles in that, the plank you can place and then walk to the other side, or you can place it up against a wall, climb up and pull it up with you. So there's kind of these interesting ways to move these pieces around, mm-hmm. and they never really explored it.
They do that once toward the end, almost at the very end when you're in the city. But
yeah,
but I honestly think that was almost too much when they were doing that there, just because it's not a puzzle game, I don't know how well it would jive with the rest of it.
But. Even in the best implementation, it's not a puzzle, it's a task. It's a series of tasks that you have to perform.
Yeah.
There's no thinking it through. It's just taking the time to execute the proper button presses to get there. Mm-hmm. Right.
Which, okay, yeah. if it's a loading screen, then I can allow it. But
I think that I would just rather it have a loading screen. If I'm being entirely honest. Like, don't frustrate me with this thing that harms the narrative experience. Just make it clear that, okay, you're playing a video game and on occasion it's going to need to load. Or, do what a bunch of other games do, which is have a conversation there and slow down the walk speed as you're trying to walk, trying to get through these places.
Yeah.
Right?
It really, really irked me. And here I am talking about all the things I didn't like, but overall I love this game.
Yeah.
But that the conversations were optional. Mm-hmm. And you've said before, Cole, that the best reward for doing well at a game is more game. Mm-hmm. But I didn't feel like the conversations were structured that way. I felt like it was structured that, if you happened to walk past the right thing at the right time, you would, and we're looking at Ellie, you would mm-hmm. notice the icon.
Yeah.
And that seemed just entirely too easy to miss and didn't have any, there weren't conversation points that I could work towards. It's just I had the luck out. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we'll be able to go back through and get all those conversation pieces because I loved them. Mm-hmm. I just wish there was a little more rhyme or reason to be able to get them all.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm just glad they're I'm assuming there's no trophy for hear all conversations or examples.
Oh, there is.
Oh, fuck. Come on.
Yeah.
Naughty Dog, for real?
There's a trophy for every type of collectible in the game.
I expect better.
Yeah, ridiculous.
I don't know why I expect better. I have no reason to expect better, but...
I think you guys are complaining too much, man.
I don't know. I mean, just like I thought that those were fine. I didn't mind that they were optional. In fact, I kind of liked that it encouraged me to pay more attention and to you know, chew my food more thoroughly. Just because this is a game that very deeply rewards exploration, taking your time, and that is a skill, especially in something that is ostensibly action oriented, right?
Yeah, and I will say I do love that they have finally found a narrative reason in a game to just go poking around every single little corner.
Yeah, and
like that's awesome.
And I feel the need to still like to talk here. This game is goddamn beautiful.
Oh yeah,
like we haven't talked about it too much because it kind of seems like a foregone conclusion. But like this is something that happens at the end of the console's life cycle, where like just a company, like a dev team, has so mastered the hardware that they're able to not just like make something that looks pretty, you know, with a high level of fidelity, but they're able to kind of just like flesh out this crazy new experience and feel on here. You know, just on what is, you know, 7-year-old hardware.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like it is just fucking gorgeous. You know, I'm a big fan of the Destroyed Beauty kind of aesthetic anyway, but it is very, very convincing and well put together level design and environment crafting.
Graphically, it's the God of War of this generation.
there was a God of War this generation, but.
Well, you know, like when the PS2 was done, the first one came out, and it's like, wow, that's like, crazy. Whoa. That's on the PS2.
Like, shit, dog. Yeah.
It's like that.
Yeah, it's like shit, dog.
It's like shit, dog. Title?
I think that was the name of one of the bosses in God of War.
Shit, dog. I think you're thinking of Cerberus.
God of Humility.
But... but yeah, so you're going through just basically. I love the idea that there are parts of the city, like, you know, around the outside of this quarantine zone that just have been reclaimed by nature, been claimed by these infected, and you're walking right through them as you're fleeing from the authorities, right?
Yeah, some of the I think the scariest moments for me was where I would walk up to what I thought was a random pile of muck. And realize that, oh no, this is where a human was, and then a fungus like completely overgrew it.
Yeah, and when you get into the clicker segments, and just kind of like, there's something so horrifying about fungal growth that like just I can't. But you have these gigantic just swaths of the wall that are completely just with these, I don't know what you call them, lobes of this stuff, like just completely being claimed by this malignancy, right?
Yeah,
this colorful, horrifying alien malignancy that, you know, was growing out of somebody. That's how this stuff spreads. It is using people as a vector to spread and fertilizer.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. God, sorry, unsettling. But
yeah, so they bomb the downtown after the initial infection, yeah, right, to try to kill it.
Yeah.
Which explains kind of some of the extent of the destruction. Sorry, go ahead, man.
Did you read the journal entry about how, like, how they were bombing the downtown, but, like, they basically just sent out a letter as, like, leave downtown, we're going to bomb it, but, like, provided no evacuation for it? They just bombed it.
I think I might have missed that.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah, that's crazy. But yeah, this first kind of quarter or a third of the game, you know, climaxes when Tess reveals that she's bit. You're at the Capitol building, and the authorities are coming down on you. Basically, Tess says, "I'm done for. I'm going to make my last stand here. Joel, you have to make sure that Ellie gets to where she needs to go."
Yeah,
yeah.
And which I think she says something like, you know, after everything, you at least owe me this, or something like that, which is as much of an indication or nod to a romantic relationship as you get.
Right. Yep. And it works. You know, I kind of knew the second I saw her, like, oh, Tess gonna die, but
not on the cover.
I don't know. You just, there are some people that when you see them in a story that you just know they gonna die. So
yeah.
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 Dennis, how far are you in Breaking Bad?
Oh, I need to start it.
Oh, okay. God, there's never been a better time. You've seen the first episode of season 6 or whatever it is, right, Ben?
Yeah, I was going to say Jesse is somebody who I think of as an example for that, given the first episode.
You know, he was originally written to die, right? He was saved
in the first season. Yeah,
yeah, he was saved by the writer's strike. Well, now we just spoiled that Jesse doesn't die in the first season.
I actually heard an NPR article where they were interviewing him about that fact. So that's already spoiled for me. Plus, I think there was like a Mubim Bam question about a character dying that I was pretty sure was Jesse from Breaking Bad. Mm. So,
yep, I will say nothing. And don't worry, people listening, we will not spoil anything in the most recent Breaking Bad. But Ben, can we just have a quick moment of vague noises?
Okay. Let me go get my garage door opener.
Yeah. Oh man. Okay. So
I don't want to know.
So
I was surprised, bringing us back. I was surprised by how mad I was when Tess was just unceremoniously shot down. Like you kind of, she says, I'm going to make a last stand.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. She says, I'm going to make a last stand. You kind of work your way around to, you know, a balcony, and you hear these gunshots as you're walking up, and there she is on the floor, didn't get a single one, like probably didn't even get a shot off.
Yeah.
Very unceremonious, and that pissed me off. Like, I was ready to shiv the first guard I saw.
Yeah, it's just kind
of, in all fairness, she didn't get behind cover or anything. Yeah.
Like, if she was trying to delay them, like, she might as well
just delay it by much. Yeah.
She may as well have just like stood there and just like, hey guys, blowing her own brains out, because like
she should have run up and bit someone.
Oh, true. Yeah, you
Which
don't know where
get
I've
you
been.
Later.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. Oh,
We can just talk about that now. Who cares? We don't need to be.
Yeah, that's true. I love the idea of like people's desperation when they're infected, right? And so, you find a bunch of like logs of people, you know, who are in the last throes, right?
Yeah, so that twist, I'm just going to skip around.
Cause yeah, no, that's fine. That's cool.
Which twist are you alluding to?
The part where Ellie bites the leader of the cannibals?
Yeah, bites David.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought that was such a good twist, because I didn't see it coming, or I didn't think about it. But I really wish they would have played it out, where, like, instead of it being, like, you go through an attack and kill everybody, I would have much rather seen, like, the camp or society that they had set up degrade into, like, clickers, essentially. I thought that would have been so much cooler.
Hmm. Yeah.
How poetic, though, that the cannibal gets, you know, infected because someone bites him.
Yeah. So I missed that she bit him, and I read much darker things into that.
How did you read it?
I read it like he assaulted her.
Oh, like, wait. Well, I mean, he straight up does assault.
Well,
her,
yeah,
right,
I mean, in a
yeah,
dark
yeah.
way. I don't want.
I think there's
for,
some
for trigger warnings, but yeah. I just like I missed that he straight up bit her, because I was probably taking notes at the time or something, and I was like, whoa, that's crazy dark. Why would he be infected right now? Ooh, he probably did horrifying things, and now it's there. Like, just I don't know why.
Oh,
I went
no,
there.
No,
yeah.
Yeah. She straight up bites his hand.
Okay, cool. That's much better. Okay.
Yeah. Although right at the end of his life, he says something about, you know, you have no idea what I'm capable of, as he's climbing on top of her. So,
yeah, yeah. So there's definitely tones of that,
but we'll get there.
Yeah, I love the idea that she just, like she realizes that she is a weapon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was kind of. Yeah, I hadn't thought about her using it that way. So, yeah.
And it's funny because Joel doesn't let her defend herself. So she spends the first part of the game, you know, just kind of as it's fortunate that she, you know, if she gets seen, it doesn't come down on you. Like,
yeah.
She's effectively invisible. But, you know, it's a plot point. She wants to be useful. You know, she's been through some shit and she wants to, you know, pull her weight, but Joel won't let her.
Yeah, although she is effectively invisible to everyone, which causes some suspension of disbelief moments you're sneaking up on someone. It's all tense, and she's just like,
I read an article that was kind of criticizing the game for that feature of it, but I was totally in support of going that route than the other route.
Yeah.
Of just being frustrated by AI mechanics or things that are out of your control.
It would turn the entire game into an escort mission. And nobody wants that.
I was really impressed, too, by the animation of how whenever they would go to lean up against the wall, how they would naturally take the pose of Joel kind of, like, covering and protecting Ellie.
Yeah, yeah, like, just trying to conserve space. Like, you're both taking up the same space along the wall, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was nice feature.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, my eyes may be playing tricks on me, but I think that their animations get a little bit more comfortable around each other, like, as the game goes along. Like, as, you know, Joel starts seeing her as, you know, maybe equals a bit too much, you know, a bit too strong of a word for it. But, you know, like, just they start to get comfortable with each other because they start out just, like, straight up, you know, indifferent to antagonistic towards each other. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I wasn't looking for that, so I'd have to look for it on my next playthrough.
Yeah, yeah. But because of Tessa's sacrifice, you're able to get out, and Joel doesn't quite know where the Fireflies are. All you know is west, and since you're in Boston, there's a lot of west.
Yeah.
All he knows is you need a car, and Joel knows somebody, hence Bill.
He's going to try to find his brother, I think they say, which he needs a car to find his brother, because there's a lot of west, as you said, hence Bill.
Hence Bill. Boy, I like Bill.
Yeah.
But again, I was still not sold on the game at this point because it was going down the same path as like Half-Life 2, where it's like, going into a city filled with clickers and have one strange guy who has a bunch of traps there.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Yeah. First off, like when you get out of the city and you see the woods and Ellie reacts like, oh, this is the first time I've seen this. Like the kind of how they share that wonder, not just because it is a really beautifully rendered, you know, bit of greenery that you haven't seen so far, but just because like, oh, you're sharing this and like you're seeing it through her eyes, kind of.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then you get to the town, which is, and you know, Bill's the sole inhabitant, and he's got a bunch of booby traps set out, which I like that. I love the notion of somebody kind of becoming a recluse who surrounds himself with booby traps. You know, and becomes just a survival pragmatist.
I also love that you catch him talking to himself at multiple points.
Oh, yeah. Because, like, what else would you do?
Yeah. But I think, and tell me if I'm misremembering, at one point it's even like, you shouldn't have done that, you dumbass. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, can you blame him?
No.
Sorry, I have a lot of sympathy for him, especially with how his plot resolves.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah, so is there too much to talk about here aside from, like, he says, like, okay, we need a battery for the car that I have. Military has batteries. Military was holed up in a high school. You go to the high school, but you find that it's overrun with clickers, including a boss infected who you have to fight.
Yeah, and this is the first time you see him, which, again, felt so video gamey.
Yeah, it was more video gamey that he had a ranged attack, honestly. More than anything, I like the idea that a person's entire body has been claimed by the fungus as opposed to just the head, and they're armored because of that, you know, because of these growths, you know, they kind of turn into this plate monster.
So now, did you say this was the fourth stage?
The what now?
Before it was said there was a fourth stage, so I wanted to go through all the stages. Is the first stage human?
Yeah, the first stage, it's kind of like what Joel kills at the beginning, just like somebody who acts like they're rabid. Later. Yeah. And then there are the ones who are a little bit more erratic. They have some fungal growth, but they're not full clicker yet. And they're just a little bit more tough and less predictable. Then you have the clickers, whose heads have been overgrown. And then you've got the brutes or whatever they are. I don't even know.
I had not differentiated between the first and second.
Yeah. I didn't differentiate until I was reading articles and stuff.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's cool because, you know, Bill straight up says something that is, you know, kind of neat, which is I have no problem dealing with the infected. They're predictable. It's other people that you have to worry about, which, of course, is a theme of most apocalyptic literature, but it is addressed here in a very big way. And it's a theme that's carried throughout.
Yeah. I think it's also interesting to see Bill's, you know, the kind of backstory or explanation.
Yeah,
you get a pretty deep glance into his character.
Yeah, so you get to this car that you were trying to get the battery from, and it's gone. And you're like, fuck. You go, you know, you're trying to get back, and then you find you find a truck in a garage just by coincidence, and it's the battery that you're looking for. Go ahead.
I was gonna say I really like the parts in the game where it feels like you're just panicked and improvising, which the high school completely was for me.
Oh yeah, it's just kind of like, oh, it's a trap. We're done.
Yeah.
Speaking of trap, holy shit, the refrigerator?
Yeah, yeah.
We almost skipped over that. When you're in the big like garage workshop kind of thing, down. And you're hanging upside down. Yeah.
As you texted me, or no, it was on one of the earlier episodes where you were talking about where you were.
My world just got turned
upside down.
Yeah.
Although, I will say, if you have played Tomb Raider, that was not a novel mechanic.
There's a bunch of stuff that I understand is kind of cribbed from Tomb Raider in this.
But it's done well.
Not cribbed, but just kind of like co-evolved, right?
Yeah.
And I've not played Tomb Raider, so I can't speak to that.
Components of good third-person shooters.
Yeah, but so I've heard people complain like, "Oh, why is it that you have unlimited ammo when you're upside down?"
And it's like, "Cause this would be infuriating."
Yeah, yeah, just like to like learn to take yes for an answer, okay?
Yeah.
I had not even noticed that.
Yeah, yeah, you don't have to worry about ammo when you're suspended like that.
I'm sorry, Ben, not all of us can have 100% accuracy.
Oh, no big deal, you know.
I wasn't saying it because of that.
Yeah. But yeah, so that I just wanted to allude to that. But to Bill, turns out that Bill's former partner took the basically was like, "Hey, screw it, I'm tired of being around you. You're blah blah blah." Had all these reasons about his personality. Here's your fucking battery, and then he hung himself.
Yeah. Was he infected? And why he killed himself?
I think so. Yeah, I think he got infected and then he ran off and did those things. That's okay. The sense that I got. And if you look at his corpse, he's got signs of it.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah. They were lovers.
I was gonna say that's the question: were they friends?
I was gonna say, to what extent did you take that relationship? Because it leaves some ambiguity as to this was just a guy that Bill kind of had a crush on and may or may not have been into him, or if they actually had a romantic history. It wasn't really clear.
It's all but said. Like when Joel is talking to him, so I'm like, "Hey, man, that's a real tough break." You know, talking about those guys. Like.
So, did you guys give him the note?
Yeah, I gave him the note.
Do you have an option not to?
It's a conversation option. Like if you find the note, you can go up to him and offer it to him. Huh. Yeah.
And then did you pick it back up?
Yeah, and it was all crumpled. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the thing I couldn't, because it definitely seems like one possibility is that they were lovers. And then, but then my second thought after that was perhaps it was just, I don't want to downplay that option, but I also thought that it also might be just like the fact that was the only person he had.
True. Yeah.
He's all alone now, but at one time he had one person,
Yeah.
And that was, and I thought, well, in any case, I thought that was a way to start thinking about Ellie, essentially, because. Yeah. This is one way that a relationship of two people could end.
Yeah, and it plays into the whole you have to find a reason to fight kind of thing, right? You have to actively create your reason to survive, right?
Before you said that, I was going to comment that Bill's town felt weirdly expendable to me. Like it felt like a very closed loop in that it kind of gave you some extra levels but didn't really advance the plot. Like they could have just as easily have had Joel walk up and find a car, or like, "Hey, I know a guy who's got a car who owes me a favor," and it was a cutscene. But as you talk about that, it's kind of exploring ways that these my one person relationships could play out that actually feels a lot more useful to the game now.
The nice thing about the game is like every segment of the game is showing you how the world is affecting its inhabitants, like how people are reacting to what the world is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the people who the people who just straight up try and kill you are the least interested, the ones who are just trying to get along. I don't know, that feels like an incredibly obvious thing to say, but I think that Bill, it's definitely another extreme that a person could go down.
Yeah.
I think that the real tragedy is that Ellie stole one of his porno mags.
Yeah.
which I took to be a gay porno mag. However, it is unfair of me to assume that a gay person who had a porno mag would immediately be sleeping with the other person that, he was with. So I don't know what that says about my prejudices. That's just the way that I read that situation.
No, it's,
yeah. I thought that scene was played really.
Yeah.
Nah, I'm just fucking with you.
Yeah, why are the pages stuck together? Joel's uncomfortable look. Yeah, it's like, oh, okay, they're getting comfortable together.
Yeah, I like the evolution of Ellie as a kleptomaniac throughout this game.
Yeah. This chapter also serves a really important purpose in that, like, it shows that Ellie can actually hold her own, you know? Like Bill's, Bill's pretty upset with her because she's making fun of his weight, but, saying, like, she's going to get you killed, she's going to fuck up, and then eventually she doesn't, she actually helps, and so Joel recognizes that Ellie's a potential resource, right?
Yeah. And Bill's definitely saying that from, like, his own biases and life experiences, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You know.
And it's their banter, and it's hard to call it banter. They're bickering, I guess. I don't know what it's called. Like, that's some of my favorite dialogue in the game.
Yeah.
But then as they're driving away, another jump cut.
Yes. Yeah. So I love how the game doesn't, like, put a banner on where you're going to. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I love how it's not like Boston 20 blah blah blah, it's just like, here is a city and you have to look at the cues, you know.
You have to find the yellow thing to figure out where you are,
pretty much. God, I love that. So in Uncharted 2 it was red, and in this one it's yellow.
Yeah,
caution tape, right?
Yeah. And so I like the way that they introduce this. Like, Joel pulls up and the highway's blocked, and he's, you know, he hesitates before driving into the city because he knows it's probably going to be a trap.
Mm-hmm. And in hindsight, you know why he thinks it's a trap.
Because he's done the same thing.
Yeah.
That's a great little piece of dialogue. Like, it's one, you know, how'd you know it was a trap? I've been on both sides.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
How many innocent people have you killed? ... I'll take that to mean a lot. You know, which is like a really serious thing. Like, she's calling him a murderer, but
a little bit of dark humor going on there.
Yeah, yeah. If it's even intended to be humor, who knows?
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
Yeah.
I didn't laugh at that comment.
No, smile.
Wherein Dennis realizes he's a psychopath.
Yeah. So if there's anything that kind of felt like padding to me, it was most of Pittsburgh. But that's really just me, because it was a lot of, like, running around in a hotel that was very poorly signposted to my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the world's largest hotel.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
Yeah. And go ahead.
I was going to say that the rooms, I appreciated that they made so many of the rooms available to go inside, but ultimately that did not add anything from a story or tactical perspective.
Yeah.
It added places to scavenge.
True.
Yeah,
but,
I guess.
But it also opened up, like, big loops that you would find yourself going in circles and circles and circles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You get into the basement, and it's not really that well signposted where you have to go in order to get things through.
Get in is an understatement. Crash down into, maybe?
I suppose, yeah, yeah.
I feel like the basement was purposely oblique, though.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, it was... Okay, so, like, for some reason, I was flashing to the escape sequences in Silent Hill Shattered Memories.
A little bit.
Where they do intentionally obscure, your routes through those places. Mm-hmm. God, I want to play that game again. It's been a really long time.
It takes like 4 hours to beat.
I know, right?
You could totally play it tonight.
Yeah.
No. Except that would take you to, what, 18 hours, 20 hours?
Yeah, something like that. I've been going strong, guys.
Okay.
For this fucking week. But yeah. And it's also one of the few instances where you have to solve a puzzle, which I would not normally be opposed to. But it's really, I've been saying this word too much recently, but incongruous with what you're expected to do.
Are you thinking of a specific puzzle, or are you just talking about general traversal, find the underwater passageway?
Oh yeah. So it's find the underwater passageway, but this is also where you have to turn on the
generator.
Power. Yeah, you have to turn on the generator in order to get the in order to use the card reader to proceed.
Yeah, I just kind of wrote it off as a mandatory scary moment.
Yeah. Same.
It's like, yeah, I mean, Silent Hill does the same thing. I don't think anybody, like, loves playing scary moments, but
yeah. Well, I do.
This was the first time in the game where I realized that just completely run away was a legitimate strategy.
Oh God, yeah. The second you turn on that generator, it is a straight bolt to that door.
Yeah.
Beat feet.
Yeah. Yep.
Agreed. I'm glad that we all came up with the same strategy on that. I tried to fight them for one save, and then I was like, well, I'm not going to do that again.
Well, does it? Because I didn't even look to see what it sent at me. I was just like,
Well, again, that's like, you have to be a little bit genre savvy, because you just know in a survival horror game, it is better to run if you can. And I've been doing that the whole time.
Oh. Really? Yeah. I mean, in terms of running, like, once you've been discovered, can you usually run to the exit?
Yeah, you can usually get to the load, to the loading. And it's neat because they put the, like, if you're, most of the cutscenes are bookend, or most of the stealth sections are bookended by cutscenes, and most of those cutscenes at the end start with you slamming the door behind you and barricading it.
Yeah.
So you know that, like, okay, if I have a shot at getting to the exit, I can actually save myself not only a bunch of time and stress, but also a bunch of resources.
Yeah. You also know it's a stealth scene coming up because the floor is suddenly just covered in bricks and bottles.
Yeah. And then later on, broken glass.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. So the whole hotel sequence, I like what it leads to. You know, I like the characters that they introduced to you, the brothers. But yeah, it felt like it was intentionally stymieing my progress at a bunch of different turns.
So how do you feel with the climax of the hotel of Ellie saving you when you were being drowned?
Yeah. Yeah, that was fantastic. I like how that kind of came out of nowhere. You're climbing up this ladder, just kind of like, okay, I've been moved. You know, I moved another ladder. That just means I'm going to proceed to something I could have otherwise gotten to with minimal inconvenience if they didn't put this bullshit. But you get to the top, and this dude kicks you over, and then he's drowning you. You know, drowning you. You're reaching for the gun. She picks up and plugs him in the head. And I love that moment because you can tell Joel's like, okay, she saved my life, but I really wish she didn't have to do that.
Yeah. It's almost like he had made up in his mind that I'm going to protect this girl from the thing, or from combat or whatever. And now that she's had to save him, he realizes it was a complete necessity, but still doesn't like the idea of it. So they do a really good job of letting him slip into grumpy old man every now and again. Like it's almost cute, which is tough to say when you've just watched a 13-year-old blow someone's head off, but yeah, you know,
and
there it is.
And it pays off later. Like, you know, she's trying to convince him rightly, like, isn't a thank you in order? Because I just did this awful thing to save you, you know. And she says it was him or you, and he won't admit it, but later he does, you know, just kind of like saying, hey, wait a second, it was him or me. You know, again, it is a story about these two people, you know, growing to respect each other. Apparently, like, you can argue whether or not it ends up being that way. But
and then they give you the gameplay payoff of having her shoot a bunch of people with a rifle.
Yeah. Oh, I like that, though.
Blam.
That was another good scene that because you basically get out of this place, get into a courtyard, and there's enough people that, you know, Joel decides, OK, fine, you can have a rifle. I'm going to trust you. And then you go in. This was that whole kind of sandbox that fight occurs in has a lot of people. And it was another one of those times where I felt like I was panicked and improvising, and it works really, really well.
Yeah. And her AI for who she shoots and when is really good.
Yes.
Yeah.
To the point where I would like lure people outside.
Yeah. Into her line of sight. It works really well.
Yeah. And then this is where they introduce what would be the equivalent of the tank in Uncharted 2, which was a tank.
This is more of an ATV, right? Not ATV. It's a guy on a four-wheeler. No, it's like an armored personnel carrier that has a turret on the top of it. Right?
You don't ever actually address that. Oh, no, you do eventually. Okay. Sorry. I was going to – for some reason, I was forgetting about the sniper sequence, but we'll get there.
Yeah. Yeah. This is substantially later, too. The sniper fight
where you actually take care of them, because in the initial introduction it just kind of wanders off.
I go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say, so you see it initially during the day, sneak into the, I don't know if it's a hotel anymore or not, but where you meet the two people, Sean and who's the other one?
I forget.
Hold on.
I texted you their name.
I know.
Yeah, so their names are Henry and Sam, and you come across them in the financial district.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love – this is probably my favorite line of dialogue from the game, is after that initial scuffle, you know, you're picking up and you decide, oh, okay, these guys can actually be allies. And Henry is like, man, you hit hard. Yeah, I was trying to kill you.
Which is really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you guys – so like this was kind of – I had a similar feeling as after I saw The Road for the first time. But I did not trust these characters the first time that I saw them. I wanted to know what your thoughts of them were the first time you saw them.
I kind of picked up immediately that they were going to be like analogs for Joel and Ellie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like just kind of like, oh, you know, here's a mirror for you to look at. And you know, it eventually came to light when you saw how hard, Henry was on Sean, that like, you know, this is eventually how Sean would treat himself if Joel kept on being a hard ass toward her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I went straight to trusting him, and I think it was when and this becomes significant later, but Sam tries to take a little toy. And Henry's like, hey, we only take things if we have to.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, these are good people.
It's been 20 years. He was born. Like,
yeah.
Let this kid have some joy in his life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you guys introduced this thought to me earlier. I thought about these. I hadn't thought about these as another example of how Joel and Ellie's relationship could play out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I saw them. So Ben, you thought that they were going to be, you know, that they were going to backstab you, which they do.
Yeah. When we're walking to the room or like their base or whatever, I was like, oh, they're just going to walk us into the hunters, and I bet they're hunters, and we're going to die.
Oh,
like,
yeah, you know. Yeah.
So, but yeah, as soon as like it was an actual place and like cutscenes and stuff, I was like, okay, they're fine, I guess.
Yeah.
But
I think they could have done a better job, because what happens is they, you know, you're trying to climb up on something and the ladder breaks just as the bad guys are breaking in, and yeah. Henry and Sam make the decision to abandon you versus stay around and try to hoist you up, because I feel like they could have done a better job of making it clear that they weren't going to be able to get you up in time, or like, you know, he could have pointed, because when you get back together, Henry is like, oh, you know, I trusted that you could find an exit, and you did, man. Good on
you. Cool, right?
Yeah. Rats off to you.
But then they're like, yeah, we're cool. Okay. Like, what?
Yeah.
So they, like, that would have been so easy to write just a little bit better.
Yeah. I mean, well, I think the point of that scene was to try and, like, show that Ellie was sticking with you, you know, like, despite what was going on, and, like,
that's
build
fair,
the relationship there.
Mm-hmm.
But I totally agree with you, though, where it's like, yeah, they too easily smooth that situation over with no one getting upset about that, because that's totally a deal breaker as far as survivor relationships go. Yeah. I feel like.
Well, and I mean they point out that, oh hey, I saved your life, so I must be okay, which would be a valid argument if you weren't all saving each other's lives about every 5 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is a revolving debt. Like, it's not just.
Yeah.
But
and by no means is it like outrageously bad. It's just everything else in the game is so high quality story and motivation wise that the places where it falters even a little bit stick out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like them as characters, but just the function that they serve is weird.
I assumed, I would have agreed with you, except for now I'm looking at all these character pairs as here's how your relationship could end up. Here's how your relationship could end up, which, as we play out to the conclusion, this is legitimately a way that the relationship could have ended.
Yeah.
It could have only been one way, with Joel being bit and Ellie blowing her head off.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah.
A little bit of an inversion there.
Figure that one out. But, the next place you go is the hideout, right? So you escape, the military people jump off into the water, they pull you out, and the military hideout is just so well done in terms of indirect storytelling.
Is it military or is it?
I don't think it's military.
It's just a sewer system.
Yeah.
That's
so you see the remnants of the civilization that, like, this guy Ish, you know, was basically trying to form because he thought the sewers were defensible.
Mm-hmm. And like, you read the note at the beginning too, where he was just like, I saw a family, like, they're probably not going to make it. You know what? Fuck it. I'm going to go talk to them and see if they want to live down here and start a society.
Yeah.
And hey, guys, want to start a society? It's a pickup society.
Hey, it's a pickup society. Yo.
Shirts worth skins.
You guys want to play some horse? By which I mean eat a horse because I'm real hungry. but there are two awesome details down here, aside from the cool horror stealth elements, which are you see their rainwater collection system, which mm-hmm. indicates that this is the society had a chance to mature. And then you also see the nursery, like the nursery in the grade mm-hmm. school, which is just yeah. as tragic as possible.
Yeah, yep. They didn't suffer. Three words just yep. wrecked me.
Yep. Ugh.
Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then I think the realization, though, that got me is once I got out of the crazy fight at the end of that, I stopped, thought, and realized, oh, I just fought the remains of everyone who I had just been reading about.
Right.
Yep.
Like, that got me.
Yeah. I think that the twistedly funny part about this is you went in through the back door, and when you get the door is barricaded on the way. I'm like, oh, that's kind of weird. And then you get to the well house and you see like, don't go in, infected, stray painted on the door.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. And yeah, I think one of the things that stuck with me too is like in the one letter where it's just talking about there was just one open door, you know, like one person made one mistake out of a group and then everybody suffers for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Should have made double doors, man. Checkpoint like in Half-Life 2.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, they were trying to escape from the military, I presume.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we didn't talk too much about the hunters. I just want to say real quick that I think that it's neat that they are the ones who fought against the military and then immediately took over all their gear and weapons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a real interesting dynamic there. Military, hunters, fireflies, like no one's in the right on this one.
Right.
Yeah, everybody is morally ambiguous, it seems.
Yeah, and they set up the fireflies as like a legit terrorist group because they claim responsibility for a bunch of bombings and stuff.
Yeah, they're like the fishes and children of men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so you kind of you're headed into the actual like suburbs of the city, right? Mm-hmm. Which mm-hmm. is just to you think that you're going to be headed across the country with these two, but the hunters kind of catch up to you. They're real, real angry that you killed a bunch of their dudes, right? And this begins a really awesome sequence as you're going down this hill through a neighborhood that's in development, fighting against a sniper, right?
Yeah.
Wait a second. A neighborhood in development?
Well, yeah, yeah. Like you see these houses that are like half built.
Okay.
Or half torn down. I'm not sure. I don't know. Frames of houses that you're using as cover.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's nice, like, when they set up this whole sequence, they made it sound like, the brothers and Ellie could draw the sniper's fire, mm-hmm. that there was some way to use that. I could never quite understand what was going on.
Yeah, I know.
It was really just managing your line of sight towards that one point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but I thought the pacing on this was like excellent. Like this set piece of the game really got me because, I don't know how they do resource management, and I don't know if they could control this for everybody. But I was like at the last of my bullets as people were coming into houses to find me, and so by the time I ran out of bullets, I was coming to the house, and I might have had like one or two shots left in my shotgun that were saved for Mr. Sniper Dude. So, but all of that just made it a really great experience for me.
Yeah.
I agree. It's also the most successful I was in the game with the tactic of just like charging as far as I could and trusting that I could get behind everyone and hide. Cause like I kind of definitely got into the sprawl, but then I got into the areas behind in the yard behind the sniper, which there's surprisingly a great deal of space back there to work with, and I would kind of hide in the houses below the sniper and pick people off one by one. I agree with the intensity. It was kind of ruined for me because I had someone fall through the floor.
Duh.
Like just their chest is at floor level. Unfortunately, I was still able to kill him, but it was just kind of this funny thing of I'm braining you as you're stuck in the floor. So
yeah.
We'll just pretend that the floor fell through because it's old or something.
Yeah.
But then I love how this, like, you think that it's reaching a crescendo. It's like, we're going to make everything safe. And then the tank shows back up, or the truck shows back up.
You thought that was going to be the end? Like, hey, I just got the gigantic sniper rifle.
Well, no, I didn't think that I was going to use it. I thought that he was just a dude with a sniper rifle. I didn't think the sniper rifle was part of the world.
Oh, that's like a rule of video games. If there is a sniper nest you fight your way to, you will then turn around and fight.
I just don't play enough shooters.
Get to the turret and then use the turret. That's the thing in Mass Effect 3, too.
Yeah, I suppose that is accurate.
That's a thing in all the things.
Yeah. It's a thing in everything.
Yes.
That's the golden rule of video games, is if there's a big gun that you see or is broadcast to you for a while, as soon as you get it, you're going to have some fodder.
And there, all of a sudden, 3 million enemies that just got off their smoke break come back.
Well, no, it's not just enemies. So you take out the, the truck because the guy who's running it is dumb enough to get out and start throwing Molotovs.
Oh, right. Yeah. And he does this little whack-a-mole thing where he's popping up and you almost have to anticipate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like the character in Mario 3 that throws
things. Yeah. But then all this noise of this, like, apocalyptic battle has brought in a whole host of undead. Not undead, infected. So you have to take them out, too. It is a marathon encounter that, like, in my mind, in recollection, I think, like, that all couldn't have been one. Yes, it was one thing.
Yeah. Just a very good, sustained high level of intensity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I dig that a lot. And you have this nice little calm, you know, aftermath where, like, we think we made it, right?
How much do you think Harley Davidson paid for that little segment?
To talk about the, like, just, you know, joking about, you need to ride a Harley?
Well, yeah, there's when they're sitting around the quote-unquote campfire and sharing stories about what it was like before the infection, that's like the one thing I – can't remember if it was Joel or Henry who, like, just really, that's the one thing they wanted to do anymore is.
Oh, yeah.
Right. You don't understand, man. It was a Harley.
Ride a hog. How would you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it made sense. I mean, Harley Davidson is Americana, and most of post-apocalyptic stuff is about celebrating, you know, degraded Americana, right?
Yeah, they talked about barbecues as well.
Yeah. And you get the sense, so you know, Ellie goes to talk to Sean, and, you know, you get the sense he's being too hard on himself, whatever. She tries to give him the toy because, you know, she lifted it because she's a little klepto. And, you know, he asks her, like, hey, do you think they're still in there? Which, you know, kind of
he's
a
bit.
One of them got bit. You know that when you're shooting them off someone, they're like, we're okay. Like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I love in The Walking Dead, where eventually, like, anytime somebody is rescued from a scrape, they are automatically checked for scratches because enough people lie about it. Not so much the game, I guess, but in the books and movies. But yeah, it's kind of revealed in a pre-cut. You know, it's kind of like, oh, you know, he's acting weird, and then he lifts up his pants and shows the bite marks on his ankle. Like, yep, this is fucked. So, did you guys see Henry killing himself?
Yes.
I mean, I looked at it and I watched it happen, but it just came out of nowhere for me. Like,
oh, did you think that would happen?
Yeah. I suppose that's what I mean.
I mean, just as you're playing a game, you kind of play through, okay, oh, he's bit, so what are the possibilities of how this could play out? Mm-hmm. And, you know, certainly that entered my mind as one of the possibilities, but mm-hmm. I think they did a really good job of making you unsure. You know, Joel has a plot shield. He's not going to shoot Joel.
Yeah.
Well, I say that, and then Joel is, like, out of the game for a while. So.
Well, I imagine Henry being, you know, because Henry, like, blames Joel for it because he's not in his right mind because he just lost, you know, his world entire, right? And, you know, I figured that Joel would end up having to put him down because he was just going to go nuts, right? Sorry. Phone's going.
Somebody listening to Eric Satie.
Wow, you actually pointed that out. That is my ringtone. So
nice.
But
that's a calming ringtone.
I know,
sorry,
right?
So I thought they were going to do more with Ellie. I mean, basically, the conversation that Ellie has with Sam is, like, hey, do you think maybe there's any chance that there's some kind of afterlife, or, you know, mm-hmm. these people aren't just entirely fucked. Mm-hmm. And Ellie's like, no, there's no afterlife. We're all fucked. And then he dies. So I thought they were going to do more with Ellie feeling guilty about that or feeling right. some sort of remorse. But she seems to just kind of like, hey, what do you think I should do with this toy? Like, yeah. It seemed to affect her. I would have liked it to affect her a little more.
Like Ellie's entire modus operandi is survivor's guilt to the point where like it is below notice for her to experience it. Right.
No, that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess if you're not torn up about being the only one in the world who can survive infection.
Yeah. It's you like, like, you know, if you're not asking why me on a daily basis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very, very fair.
But just, I was taken aback, you know, just utterly shocked when Henry just turned the gun on himself, like knowing that there was nothing left for him after this, or believing there was nothing left for him after this.
Yeah. And that's the end of the first quarter of the game, which is actually probably
it's more like the first half, like to two thirds. It's the first season of the game, you know.
And then
like
it goes all Rushmore and Juno and.
Yeah. I was going to say, just like Requiem in a Dream, Fall ends with a black man having blood on him.
Jesus,
what? Need to go see that. Yeah.
Go watch Requiem for a Dream. You'll know what I'm talking about.
Yes, but, wait.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that was one thing that I was. Like, it was fine that they did that, but yeah, that was one thing that I almost didn't like about the game, because it's like, if you've seen Requiem for a Dream, it's like, well, that's just lifted right out of that, you know? Like, but anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. Sorry, I'm bushed.
It's all right, the final three quarters goes a lot faster than the first quarter.
I'll speak to
that's
that.
That's true.
Yeah. So in general, I think that the game is incredibly well paced. You know, just to do, but it starts out with kind of this promise, if you know about like where everything is headed, in that it's going to take place over the course of an entire year, and you're going to cross pretty much the entire country, right? Mm-hmm. And so, given that I had played probably 7 or 8 hours up to this point, it was like, man, it's only fall, and I'm only in Pittsburgh. Come on. And then it skips you like a couple of months and about 2,000 miles.
Yep.
Yeah. And that part part took me even more aback than Henry shooting himself.
Yeah.
Like my gut reaction was like, wait, I don't get to see what happens. And then I realized like, I don't need to see what happens. I know what happens. Like that. I know how that situation plays out. I know how it, you know, affects them. And I'm seeing this entire game is about the aftermath of horrible things, right? Mm-hmm. So
right, and just the, you know, like the whole idea that you get a sense for what happened by what they're talking about. So they're like, you know, Ellie and Joel, their rapport has gotten better. You know, Ellie has been reading these comic books that they find along the way, and Joel is trying to help her assemble the whole series.
Where do you find the first of those?
It's like in the high school or something.
Okay,
yeah. I think it's tucked away inside the gay porno.
It's in Bill's town, because he has a whole stack of stuff and she finds what she likes.
Yeah. Hmm. How does he walk around with that thing? yeah. But you end up in Wyoming, and you know, Joel says, "Yep, last time I saw my brother, he said if I see you again, I'm going to kill you."
Yeah. good plan.
Yeah. And there's a whole kind of, you know, history between them. You know, did they just say, oh, we had a disagreement? You get the sense that it's because Tommy, who is Joel's brother, agreed with the Fireflies, whereas, you know, Joel did not.
I also, you get in some of the dialogue just that, like, Tommy realized that Joel was turning him into a killer.
Oh, yeah.
Much in the same way that Ellie, or that Joel is turning Ellie into a killer.
Yeah.
And Tommy recognized that and wanted out.
Yeah. Tommy straight up says, I still have nightmares from those first couple of months.
Right. Right. Yeah.
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 But I really like this level, you know, so it takes place. You pretty much just stumble across Tommy as you find this hydroelectric dam. You know that he's roughly in this area, in this county or whatever. And you run across a contingent of his town, Jackson, and they take you in and show you around. And this is like a wonderful. So this reminded me of the Tibetan village in Uncharted, in that okay. there was a whole like section of the game which was just calmly walking through an area and paying attention as people spoke to you, which was a nice little palate cleanser, especially after, you know, crazy sniper fight, which to yeah. you was just minutes ago, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So the first time the only time, but through the first half of playing this level, I thought it was the first time that they had ever gotten the hydroelectric thing online.
No, no.
And everyone just seemed remarkably calm for finally getting power after not having it for 20 years. Yeah. So I'm like, what the fuck? You guys can cheer or something.
Yeah.
And then I realized in retrospect, oh, no, this is they were just repairing it.
Yeah. And you get the sense that this is something remarkable in the world, which is a self-sustaining society that isn't living under the thumb of a quarantine zone.
Yes. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, it makes sense why Joel wants to stay here and send Ellie along with, you know, somebody else who kind of knows the Fireflies and the remaining territory better,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is, I mean, I would have assumed after, or, you know, at this point, they've shown you enough of what they've been through and they've given you enough of a glimpse that their relationship has developed, mm-hmm. that Joel would have had more pause.
Yeah.
I don't know. And more bitching about stuff that's really not that bad for me.
Yeah.
But when he gets shown the picture of Sarah.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
Tommy's like, I've got something yeah. for you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you take it and I don't know if your response is different depending on how long you look at the picture. I just saw triangle come up and I pressed it cause I was like, oh, QT really. Mm. But Joel's response is I'm good. Hands
yeah.
it back.
Yeah.
And that just left me like it was really a powerful moment for me, and it left me wanting because you know I understand why Joel wouldn't want to keep the picture. I get the motivations behind that. Those motivations are just so poorly expressed through now I'm good.
I mean,
like I don't know. Like you could make an argument that it's him just being really hard and repressing the emotions or whatever, but. I feel like it would have paid off a lot better if there was some sort of, you know, like, don't make me keep this or I can't keep this or,
yeah.
you know, something to indicate Joel understands what's going on in his own mind yeah. a little better than it does.
Yeah. yeah. I think that that person that he was is so far, far away in the mist. And, you know, if it feels a little undermotivated, it's probably because he doesn't want to, you know, show weakness in front of his brother. Right.
Yeah.
Because it's a tense situation.
Yeah. And so, yeah, like I said, bitching about things that aren't really that bad. But
right.
Yeah. That's yeah. what we do on this podcast.
but I mean, oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I was more bothered by it seemed kind of forced that he was just like, I don't want to be with Ellie anymore. Like, I want to pawn her off on somebody else. Like, it seemed like something that didn't really jive with the way that they talked with one another. It seemed like a unnecessary, yeah. like, drama point.
Well, I mean, so the theme of the game, obviously, and, you know, just you can tell it by looking at the cover, is, you know, like a father-daughter relationship, right? And it may have just been, like, he was here and reminded of the idea that, like, the last young girl that he was charged with protecting died. You know, it wasn't his fault, but he holds himself responsible for that. And maybe he wants to... you know, give her away because of that. He sees himself as poison. That's the yeah, way that I read it, you know?
Well, and you're absolutely, excuse me, you're absolutely right. All those elements are there. Like, he's reminded of his daughter and knows that what happened to her. he's with people who would be better for Ellie in the long run. So there's like a, I'm doing the best thing for her element.
Right.
It's just poorly executed. You might be listening to me losing my voice right now.
I am. I figured you're just choking up.
Yeah, it's a very as I'm talking about how poorly executed that powerful moment was. But yeah, like all those elements are there. Like it, and it's like I even in retrospect, like I'm tempted to remember it that way simply because all the elements were there. They could have just executed it a little better.
Right. I like so. Did you have something to say about that, Ben, or did I cut you off?
No, you're good.
Okay. So I like how she reacts. Like, you know, she, you know, Ellie's off talking to Tommy's wife. And she just bolts once she finds out what the plan is.
Yeah.
You know, and so you have to go chase her down on these weird looking horses that have strange necks.
I was going to say they got to use their horse mechanics they developed for Uncharted 3.
Yes. Yes.
Recycled horses.
Recycled Horse is the name of my ska band.
Yeah.
That's the name of my Wusserock band. You'll be hearing from my lawyer.
there's a user on the Something Awful boards. His name is Modular Horse Bits. I like that. You know what? I'm a dumbass because that's somebody from Video Games Taco. Fuck.
Oh, there you go.
Yep, there we go. but yeah. So speaking of horses... she ran off, and she's real upset because, you know, even if Joel doesn't want to admit that he's attached to her, like, she doesn't want to continue with him. And she says two really heartbreaking things, which are, you know, I'm not your daughter. I'm not her, no matter how much you think that I am. Mm-hmm. And then she also says something along the lines of, if you make me go, I'll survive, but I'll be miserable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think this is the first really clear window you get into the, you called it, survivor's guilt that she has. Mm-hmm. Just that, you know, anyone that I've ever gotten close to has either run away or died.
Yeah, and it's her parents. I mean, you know, she uses her best friend. You know, they both got bit at the same time. Mm-hmm. Her friend died. She lived. She doesn't know why. And she raises a good point, which is, you know, like, why do you think that you're special just because you lost somebody who's dear to you? Because I, you know, statistically, there is nobody in that world who hasn't gone through something almost exactly the same thing.
That she doesn't talk about her friend until the very end of the game, which I think you were just mentioning because it's relevant. Yeah. But I like that Joel like tries to pull the "you don't even understand my loss" card, and she's like, "Bullshit."
Yeah.
And, which is just a really honest reaction. I appreciated that.
And it's popped up, you know, every once in a while, but this is where it's, you know, emblazoned in neon lights, which is a major theme of the game, selfishness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Joel is an incredibly selfish person, and that is shown by the fact that he is attempting to justify all of the horrible things that he's done and continues to do with the fact that he lost somebody he loved. Tough shit. Dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Join the club.
Cole, you should go into therapy, dude.
Well, you know, it's like it's hard not to, you know, feel empathy or sympathy for him because he is the protagonist, and that's what you do with protagonists.
Yeah.
But it's you know, like it is, like you said, Dennis, it is refreshing that she calls bullshit on.
You can kind of just say, I appreciate, because you can almost tell, like, Joel's been working himself up to play that card in his mind for a long time in a lot of different situations, and he's waited to play it until now, and it's just he finds out it's utterly useless.
Right.
Which, you know, so many of these things that, you know, you have in your head seem so big until you say it out loud, and someone is like, no, that's not that big a deal.
And you know, that, like, that's, you know, I can't speak too much to, you know, relationships with humans. However,
thanks, Cole. Thanks.
So sorry. However, like, you know, like, generally, anytime you relate to somebody, like, a big thing is like that moment where you say, "Drop the shit. I can see through it." And this is that right there. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Real powerful. Then do zombies show up? I forget. How this
people
plays out.
Hunters,
yeah. So I like the idea that they're like the hunters are widespread. It gets a little bit too convenient later, but like right now, just kind of like, oh, hunters are bandits. That's what they're called. Yeah.
Because initially they were attacking the dam. That's what set off this whole series of events. Anyway,
yeah, I suppose that's right. And then
I had kind of a funny moment in this, because you're in the house that Ellie ran off to, and I was standing at the top of a staircase, and the hunters threw a smoke bomb onto the staircase, which almost got me, but I kind of ducked back up to the top. And then apparently, if you're, you know, their AI says if you throw a smoke bomb, you should just charge into that smoke.
Yeah.
You know, even if you don't have a melee weapon and the guy you're charging towards does, you know, to the tune of a machete, which you find in the house.
Yeah.
And so it was me just standing on the side of this smoke, just, you know, slicing up people as they come charging through.
Mm-hmm.
So a remarkably easy fight versus yeah. what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, definitely.
I bowed and arrowed everybody in the house silently.
We didn't talk about the bow and arrow. I fucking love that. That's my favorite weapon in the game.
I hardly used it. Again, weird.
What?
I did not use it except for a couple very specific situations.
Yeah. The
mechanic of it definitely matched like how you would use an actual bow and arrow, where it's like that moment of just zoning in, you know, like,
I also like that if you held it for too long, your strength would waver and you would have to let it down.
Yep.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the year of the bow and arrow. Crysis 3, Tomb Raider, this. I'm sure there are others.
But this is a legit bow and arrow. The other ones are crossbows, aren't they? Assassin's Creed, I think, crossbow.
I think Tomb Raider is a bow and arrow.
Yeah, Tomb Raider is a bow and arrow.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But they're cool. I like that. I dig bows and arrows as a thing. And this shows you the arc, which is nice. And it's nice that like it seems like it's dropping off drastically, but it's probably realistic, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like it's that R Resident Evil aiming style.
Yeah.
You just got to upgrade it, then it won't drop
off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the bow and arrow was the one that most drastically benefited from upgrading.
Yeah.
So like by the time, you know, I hit around this chapter, the bow and arrow was just a perfect machine of death. Yeah. Which is the name of my ska band.
Your metal band.
I was going to say, how scared were you guys to miss a tool? Because I...
Pretty scared.
I was pretty terrified about that. So I was checking a lot of corners. And in fact, the time where we had to run, you know, from the basement, I was worried because I was like, shit, I didn't check everything. I might have missed the tool.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Good.
How many did you find in your first playthrough?
I got five.
I got four.
Yeah, I got four.
Yeah.
What?
I was really good about like methodically exploring places though. So I don't know. It may have just been one of those times when I bolted.
I was going to say it doesn't much matter because you don't get enough gears to upgrade very many things to five, it seems like.
I think there's a new game plus mechanic. Yeah.
And it keeps your system. I already saved over my first playthrough, though.
So!
I know. So I've thought about it, but it'll take two games if I want to max everything out.
Well, did you play through on the hardest difficulty the first time?
I did not. I am not.
So you would have. No, I didn't. I played through on normal. But. Okay. So, now we're talking about trophy whoring. If you want to get all the trophies, you have to play the game through at least twice. And if you don't play on the hardest difficulty the first time, you're playing it through at least three times.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to do any of that. So.
Yeah, it seems remarkably ill-conceived for a Naughty Dog game. Especially because they're so sensitive about the multiplayer trophies, in which it's like, hey, play a game. So you can get the trophy, and they're not going to force you to do anything.
Yeah. There's something in terms of the setting that I really like here. If I can change the subject rudely.
Sure.
I apologize.
Oh, yeah, sure.
No, so you know, you skip, you're in Wyoming, and you go from, you know, ruined city to pristine wilderness, right?
Yeah.
And that's real cool. And it's something I think is underutilized in games, which is kind of this rustic kind of stuff. I don't know if it's because I'm getting older and my dad's coming out in me. I'm not sure. But it's like I dig this whole, you know, I dig any kind of game that includes this kind of stuff. Right. You know, it's kind of like the wilderness, woods, cabins, you know, just like, I don't know, for some reason, the mountains.
That's really tough to do convincingly.
Yeah.
Half-Life like, 2 episode 2.
Alan Wake did it really well as well. Yeah. So, like, it's rare and few and far between, but this really pulls it off just by giving you these awesome views.
I will say, like, the thing Naughty Dog does so well is, like, every scene in the game feels important, and it feels like a classic scene, you know? Like, the setting of the house, like, I remember it so vividly in my mind, just, like, the lighting of the setting and everything. It's just amazing, and that's just, you know, like, one small scene of the game, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
They have a lot of control over the color palette and kind of, like, the character of the lighting as well. And, like, that's the stuff that sticks out for me. Yeah. I mean, not just the things that you do. Obviously, the things you do. Yeah. So it comes out, you know, Joel has changed his mind and says to Tommy, like, hey, if we can just borrow some of your horses and supplies, I'll, you know, continue the last leg of the trip. And Tommy says, hey, you guys are always going to have a home here if you want, which is a real amicable way to part. Right?
Much better than I'm going to kill you.
Yeah. Which they almost do. There was a little bit of tension just as they, you know, dug up the old skeletons.
Yeah. Amazing what attacking bandits can do to mend old wounds.
You know. But you know, your next... Go ahead.
What attacking civilians can do to create them.
But you have your lead about where the Fireflies were last conducting their research, which is the fictional University of Eastern Colorado.
Is it fictional? I didn't.
It's not an actual place.
Is it Eastern Colorado or Eastern Wyoming?
Eastern Colorado. It's on the border. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like both these places, Jackson is in a town in Wyoming, and there's no such university.
Which is funny, because Jackson is a town in every state.
Yeah, I know. It's like Charleston. There's like 75,000 Charlestons in the United States. Look it up.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Little known, you may be in a Charleston right now.
I am.
But Lexington's too. Yeah, there's just a bunch of those.
Oh no, sorry, that was the dance.
There are like 17 city names in the entire U.S.
Yeah,
yeah. But you are, you know, you're headed here in order to find the Fireflies, but they never show themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
Primarily because they don't exist in this location anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Awesome things about this area. First off, some of the best stealth horror sections as you're working your way through the dorms.
Oh, the dorms.
The
yes.
dorms, man. Like so good. It's the most overgrown and fungal kind of place, which is accurate to most dorms.
What the turn is at the end, you find out the infection didn't even hit that place. No. Yeah.
these are just college students. You thought they were monsters? Yeah.
But tell me what, I might have just gotten lucky, but there was such a payoff in this section because I felt like I executed the stealth section perfectly.
Yeah.
Like it was the one time I actually used the bow and arrow and I hit all my marks, which I was not able to hit the broadside of a barn before this. You know, I was able to shiv some clickers by walking in listen mode, managed to get around the big bad guy at the end without him coming after me. It just like, it was one of those moments where I feel like, man, I've really progressed.
Yeah. Quite on the contrary, I ended up fucking this up real bad and leaning on the flamethrower to get me through. The flamethrower is your infinity plus one sword.
It's right at the beginning of the Colorado.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Section. Which is fine. Like, you know, at this point, games tend to have you accumulate powerful weapons as you go about playing the games. It's a little bit weird that like you're amassing this arsenal as you're walking around, and it kind of takes away from the desperation a little bit. Where, you know, it's a man, his gun, and his knife, and then it's a man, his gun, his knife, his flamethrower, his bow and arrow, his sniper rifle, his hand cannon.
Yeah.
What
about that?
Yeah. So it stretches belief a little bit. The other cool thing is the zoo animals that are running around,
which are played for some really good scares once you get to the building.
Yeah, but like when you come across the giraffes and Ellie goes up and pets one on the snout.
Oh, that's not until
Salt Lake City.
That's not until Salt Lake City.
What?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I done fucked up. Okay. That's
never mind, college sucks.
Never mind, college blows.
There were monkeys on this campus though, because that's what they were doing the test on.
Oh yeah, and this has the payoff. So you see the monkeys running around, they're real cute. And then you find the log in the abandoned Firefly Research Center, which is like, I didn't want to kill this monkey. I decided to just let him go. Oh, God, he bit me. Dear God. And that's what caused the entire place to collapse.
You dumbass. How did you not see that coming? But again, like one open door, one monkey.
Monkeys are always trouble.
Yeah. One open monkey.
One open monkey.
Open to biting. Yep.
Yep. Yeah. I call this one bitey. But it's a real big disappointment because, you know,
you have to go to another city and go through a whole other thing.
I suppose. Well, yeah, just go, like you think, okay, here it is. You
string of MacGuffins continues.
Yes.
Yeah. But the hunters show up just as you're about to leave. And this is a really, really good sequence because it's, I mean, you kind of get systematically dismantled partway through. And Ellie just proves how capable she has become.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as soon as the part comes up where I think someone tackles you, correct? Or do you just fall?
On the rebar?
You tackle someone off a ledge, I think.
I thought he came out of nowhere and just like tackled you off of the ledge.
I can't remember how he died, though. But yeah, in any case, you get impaled by some rebar.
Mm-hmm. Tomb Raider style.
Yeah. Kind of messes up your day. Yeah,
a little bit.
At this point, I was pretty sure that Joel was going to die.
I was not sure. I was like, well, I could totally see him dying here. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they switch it over to Ellie.
Ellie would also work here.
Yeah. And I was like, well, he did.
I guess when we talk about the ending, they can't really have him die. I guess plot shield, as you said before.
Oh, yeah.
But I would have totally been in support of him dying here and the rest of the game being just Ellie by herself.
Yeah. Because they set her up as being just this badass. Like, I love playing as her.
Well, and then watching her even coming out of the hospital, like where she's like, you know, you're falling on your side and you're like, she's like, can you walk? And you're like, yeah, I can walk. Then fucking walk.
Yeah.
Like, it's awesome. And then you're like fading in and out of consciousness and you're watching her protecting you.
So good.
Well, here's the thing I realized, and we'll talk about this in a second when we get to the lakeside section.
Right.
But, I'm feeling so proud of this, of Ellie. And then I realized that I'm proud that I've turned her into a stone cold murderer.
Yeah.
Given the context of needing to survive, I guess that's a good thing in some ways. But it's just really weird, conflicting emotions on that one.
Yeah.
Disco, did you finish The Walking Dead?
Not yet. Sorry.
Come on, dude. You have an hour left.
Oh, I'm 15 minutes from the end. I'm just under the what's the group that like takes no prisoners or whatever.
Yeah. Don't say.
So, I mean, I guess we can't. That's fine because now
we won't
alienate even more listeners, but by adding to the spoiler count. But had you have played this game, we could have had a great conversation about it.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, I done fucked up.
Wait, who are that hypothetical conversation?
It's that weird. Like, I'm so afraid the ending isn't going to be as good as I want it to be. I don't
like, dude. Just play it, dude.
A bad ending doesn't ruin a good thing.
Yeah, all right.
I want to shake you right now. You didn't finish the Dark Tower, and I want to shake you.
So. Oh, well, that's just because I thought that was the right thing to do, and I didn't.
I was going to say Stephen King warns them about that, though, right?
Yeah, but a bad ending does not ruin a good thing.
Hey, Cole, for me, it's still a good ending on the Dark Tower.
I know,
see?
Right? But it's not even a bad ending. Like, you're just afraid to see what it is.
Yeah, I am.
So angry.
My cowardice is ruining your day. I apologize.
But so speaking to the small things, and this is something that was revolutionary when they did it in Uncharted 2, but like here has played a great emotional effect. So the way that the character model collides with the world is awesome and affecting. So in Uncharted 2, they did it. Like if you were like trying to crawl through an obstructed doorway or something, like you would see his animation as he lifted his hand up, and you can't see my gestures, and like placed his hand on the door frame so he could, like get his head under, like just like, selling that natural motion. In this, it is Joel, stubbornly attempting to escape on his own and having to like brace himself against tables in order to remain upright. And then bracing himself on Ellie to go, and
with
like
huge smears of blood.
Yes, yeah. Like he is in trouble, and the way he is moving, and the way that you are disempowered in your movement compared to how things were before, really sells it in a very kinetic way that speaks louder than if they just did it in a cutscene or whatever, right?
Yeah.
I love the point where your back is against the end of some, table and a guy's coming up on you and has the drop on you. And every time you try to hit L1 to pull out your gun, you like kind of make a move toward the edge and the guy fires and you have to duck back in. Like, that played really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You had to wait for Ellie to kill him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It was great. He should have died.
Yeah. And, you know, certain plot interpretations would say that he did, but I prefer not to believe those people.
All right, let's not go all lost on this.
Yeah, I know. That's like a really long and complicated dream if he died there, you know? Like, that's not like Taxi Driver, you know?
An incident at Owl Creek Fungus. but yeah, so Joel's in a big bad way, and winter starts up with you hunting deer as Ellie. And what
I was gonna say, you being Ellie.
Yes. Yeah. Awesome sequence. I love this whole chapter, like to bits.
Mm-hmm. I felt like this was like the Tibet scene of Uncharted 2, where it's like everything you think you know about the game just kind of goes out the window, and then it's like, oh, here's a whole new world.
Yep.
Yeah. Beautiful new world. It's snow level done right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it had the bow and arrow.
Yes. Mandatory bow and arrow hunting this deer. And like it plays to the stealth in a certain weird way. And you're tracking this deer, around this area, you know, trying to kill it. It just sold so, so well. Oh, my God. I love it.
Yeah. And there's also funny death animation. It's fantastic.
There's also like, I'm not sure how much this actually affected the gameplay, but I noticed there are the sticks littered around, and if you step on it, it snaps.
Yep.
And I wasn't sure if that was a huge element or that was just kind of an interesting thing, because I was pretty good at avoiding them. So.
Yeah. I don't know. I never had that ruin anything for me, but that's because I was avoiding them.
Yeah. But like I think I stepped on the first one without realizing. I was like, oh, better not do that again. Just like it would happen in real life.
I was going to say, I mean, I assume everybody gets the same video no matter how well they hunt the deer, right?
Right.
That's one thing I was curious about, too, because it seems like there's a couple of places where they could have made it more interactive. So you know the part where you shoot either the zombie off of Henry or the zombie off of, what's his name?
Sam?
Sam, that's it. Yeah. I thought it would have been cool if they just made two cutscenes, not too much work to do, but have one where Sam's infected and have one where Henry's infected. I thought that would have been interesting, because I wasn't sure if that my shooting the one off of Henry first made an effect on that or not.
Yeah. See, I'm not sure if they did that, they would have to litter choices throughout the game. And I'm fine with it being a very controlled narrative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They do it well. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they do it just, you know, in a way where the strings are apparent, but not odious. Mm-hmm. And by odious, I mean having properties of Odie from Garfield. Sorry, that was dumb. But as you're going up to try and, you know, grab this deer, you're riding on your horse.
Does she have a horse at that point?
She does. Yeah. She leaves him kind of in the background, though.
Yeah. You are it's the same horse that she took from Tommy, so this horse has been with you for a while. You come across a couple of survivors, and Ellie is rightfully very, very suspicious of them. Mm-hmm. And they don't quite know what to do with her. The leader of this group is David, who is voiced masterfully by Nolan North, playing completely against type.
Oh, is that Nolan North?
Yes, it is.
I was going to say, Naughty Dog made a game without Nolan North. This is incredible.
Nope. Nope. But like, he plays a total creep, and you get a sense of him. Like a normal, healthy person doesn't look like that.
Yeah, it's the grandpa from Family Guy in Last of Us form.
Kind of. Like, just he just comes across as unsavory. He's real cagey and everything, and Ellie, you know, lets her guard down because the infected come in. But, she lets her guard down because they have penicillin.
Yeah. And that's the first
indication. They promise penicillin.
Yeah, they promise penicillin. And then she just kind of hangs out with him for a night as the guy goes to get it. I should have known better, but I thought this guy was totally going to be like the nice grandfatherly, you know, preacher type of guy.
I didn't get grandpa from him. I got creepy uncle.
Which he totally turns out that way. So maybe I should have read it better. But this was like, you know, the example of, see, there are people in this world you can trust, or something like that. Like, I just, for whatever reason, took him to be that kind of nice guy until, you know, he dives into cannibalism.
Yeah. You need to develop your stranger danger.
What were you going to say, Ben?
That's all I was going to say.
Pretty much, yeah.
Stranger Danger, dude.
Yeah. So you go through a fight with him, and it's just kind of like a general hold off the infected until you kill enough of the bloaters to make it through to the other side. It's interesting to fight with Ellie because she doesn't have the same kind of combat hardenedness that Joel has, and you see that especially in her melee attacks. So she has a switchblade. Whereas Joel kind of uses improvised weapons or whatever he has around, and her idea of a stealth kill is to jump onto somebody's back and stab wildly while screaming "motherfucker."
Yep.
So like it's awesome how it speaks to her immaturity, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you're probably all of what 110 pounds, you don't have many other options.
Yeah.
Yeah, so after this fight, there's really like. This was my oh shit moment where I realized something was wrong. Where he talks about, I believe, hey, we got through all right. I believe everything happens for a reason. For example,
well yeah, it's an oh shit moment because he's tightening the noose.
Well, so this is where I got the whole nice guy thing. So he says, everything happens for a reason. For example, I sent men to try to find food for this, the group I'm with, and they were murdered by this wild man. Who they say travels with a little girl.
With a little girl.
Right. And I'm like, oh, well, shit, But then the guy comes back with the penicillin. And this is the part I don't understand. They have her dead to rights, pretty much. And he's just like, hey, give her the penicillin. Everything happens for Ellie's reason. Let her go.
Yeah.
And it seemed like, so at the moment I read that as a, oh, my God, like, this is the priest in Les Miserables, right? Mm-hmm. Where, let someone go, give someone mercy even when they completely don't deserve it. Then it seems like maybe they did it expressly so they could track her back and kill Joel, which right. is the more yeah. likely explanation for me. Yeah. But even that, they don't really spell out.
Well, okay, so he spares her because he sees her as being useful, right? Like, just kind of like, okay.
Ah, creepy cannibal survivor. Yeah, okay,
yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah.
I thought they were going to play the, like, repopulate the camp card, but they never got there.
They imply it, but they don't, thankfully, they don't go that full exploitative, right?
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But like, he gives her multiple chances to survive. Like if he wanted to kill her, he would just kill her. And Joel, like, he could just let Joel die on his own, but he wants to have her around and also get rid of Joel. And he mm-hmm. can get both of those by sacrificing a vial of penicillin and then just sending his men to track her back.
Yep. Right?
Yeah. I'm going to take a moment and say how hilarious it is that even though it was fungus that killed everybody in the entire world, it is penicillin that saves Joel.
I hadn't thought about it that way.
Yeah.
Nice.
And also injecting him with that, if they didn't know if he was allergic or not, regardless.
A twist like that kills him or something.
Yeah, it's kind of like, oh, he was allergic. Like, turns out all fungus are bad. I don't know. Yeah, that was a plot point in the Stand.
Don't do shrooms, kids.
Yep. PSA.
Yeah.
It ends with like a 90s arcade, like winners don't do drugs thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you go back and you inject Joel and you hear the people around you as the blizzard starts, which begins one of the most awesome like stealth and combat sequences in the game.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
You start this out on a horse, right?
Yeah, Ellie trying to get away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that gets you into kind of the cabin town where most of this encounter takes place.
Yeah, and I guess you make it to the lodge and then you get trapped or caught.
Right, right. You make it to the lodge and you're caught in the restaurant where Joel. Oh, I'm messing that up. Yeah, you get caught and Joel is like you're kept in a cage down in the butcher room where you realize.
Yeah. Cannibal City. Population U.
Population U for now. but yeah, it's real creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the multiple ways that Ellie just like breaks his finger, roughs him up, and then eventually bites him. Like she's messing with him at every turn.
It's like, stop giving her chances. Kill her. You're not in James Bond.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, but it's yeah, it's real good, and I like the parallel converging narratives as she is working her way to escape, and Joel is waking up, you know, which is real quick to recover from sepsis, but why not?
Well, that's, they don't really. I think there's another one of those breaks where it's not clear how much time I suppose, has passed.
Yeah.
So I assume that she had been in there for a couple days.
Mm, okay.
I really like the Taken-esque interrogation scene that Joel has in the game. Yeah.
Like just where he just completely ruins somebody. Oh no! Yeah. Like the way that it works is like I need you. So he bloodies him up. Mark it on the map, and then if your friend doesn't mark the same place, you're both done. He kills the first one, and then goes over to the second person. Says, "Why would I tell you? You just killed him." And it's like I already got what I need. Blam.
Believe your friend.
Yeah. He's like,
are a psychopath.
And well, not you. Like Joel is. Joel is a psychopath.
Yeah.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, cool.
And in hindsight, this is totally foreshadowing of what's going to happen in Salt Lake City.
Yeah. And so it's just like, you know, right now, what is the duress caused by? How immediate is the danger and what is it for? Mm. Yeah. And in this case, you're willing to ride along with the fiction and say, yeah, of course he should do whatever he can to get to her because nobody deserves to be eaten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this goes to an awesome boss fight. What'd you guys think of that? Am I alone in thinking it's awesome? Because I've read some diverging opinions.
So I kind of got right away what I was supposed to do. It just didn't feel that challenging to me. There was one point, I think the second time I hit him, I ran away and then kind of lost track of him. And out of nowhere, he just showed up with a machete and one-shotted me.
Yeah.
So, okay, then I had to start over. But it started me 2/3 of the way through the boss fight. Yeah. So it was really easy to finish. So it was almost – the checkpointing was a little too good.
Which I will never complain about good checkpointing, but
– Right. So, that's why I paused. It's like it's a misnomer to say it was too good. It was too frequent.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
And thus bad.
Yeah. I liked it because it was a quiz on how well you knew the stealth mechanics.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
How much you been?
Well, yeah, so I'm pretty sure I beat it on the first try, but it's like when you walk through the restaurant and see the plates on the ground that make noise when you step over them and how they're placed at very like specific locations where it's like, hey, I might need to walk through. Oh, there's a plate there. Okay. And it's like, I bet I'm going to have to do something later here.
Yeah.
I wasn't too thrilled with it, but I think part of that was due to my disappointment of I would have much rather seen a like a system fall apart by like the Ellie Bite twist.
Oh yeah.
I thought that would have been so much cooler. So I was kind of disappointed with that because that's what I was comparing it to in my mind.
Yeah. So that would have played out in a really different way. It would have been him going feral and charging right at you, whereas I saw it more as a battle of wits.
See, I would have liked what I was thinking of in my mind is like him going feral, starting to attack his own men, and just you watching like all the men start attacking one another. And I don't know, whatever.
Yeah. But I loved the just how dramatic it was. Anyway, you're in this burning restaurant. Joel's undoubtedly on his way to help you, and then Ellie has to kill him. And it's also one of the few like discretion shots that are in the game. Like,
what do you mean?
Well, when Ellie gets David, like she starts just hacking at him and it doesn't show what it is.
Oh, right. Like, you just see the handle.
This game to this point never balked at showing you how awful something is. And
I think it's probably more awful to just have it imagined.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yes. Things that aren't shown to you can be as powerful as what you have there, but just kind of like
watch funny games.
Yep. Man. Okay. So it is a requisite that every time we have a bonus level about a particular game, we have to reference funny games.
It's a scarring movie, man.
It is. It is. It leaves a mark on you. Both versions. Yeah.
That's anyway. Another one that goes on the media pile that I know is worth watching, but I probably will never watch.
Yeah, yeah. but Joel comes in, you know, after Ellie has just taken her revenge on this guy's corpse, and, you know, they hug it out and get out.
They bro hug.
Well, yeah, it's just kind of like it's a traumatic experience, you know.
Totally.
Yeah. But yeah, it was bro grabs. Bro grabs all around.
Yeah.
Yeah. And season skip.
Yes. Yeah. So we've gone huge distances now.
Yeah, So Dennis pointed this out when we first talked about the game, but he talked about how the winter was the most self-contained story, at least like the whole cannibal side story, which I agree with. Mm-hmm. But
so now I'm trying to think of the line. What was the relationship that you could play out? I guess, you know, there wasn't really a relationship there. It didn't seem like.
I mean, it was literally a trial by fire for Joel and Ellie.
I think it was that, and I think it was showing another type of society that had formed from as a result of the.
So not necessarily a relationship, but yeah,
a
way that this disaster has affected people. So yeah, but you know, to the central two characters, no, I don't think this did a lot. Like, if Ellie was going to have that kind of moment, it was going to be when she first killed someone, and her reaction when she first killed someone was, "I shot the shit out of him." So. Right. You know, like I feel like the moment to have her be all wrecked about something like that kind of passed.
Mm, okay.
Not to say it's not really, really good. You know, like just the level design is phenomenal. The concepts that are behind it are really good.
Yeah,
I did really like the bell that went off.
The dinner bell
that marked time for you. Yeah. Was it a dinner bell?
Maybe not.
I like that interpretation. I just had not thought of it like that
before. I thought it was a fire alarm.
Mm.
I thought it was like a church bell or something. Some sort of, I don't know.
Any bell can be a dinner bell if there's food behind it.
But I thought that was really cool to be able to sync up storylines like that. You know, that's something that I don't think.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I made a note of that, actually.
Like that's something that's done in movies a lot, right? Or even television shows, but I haven't seen that done to a huge degree in video games.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just as a very non-obvious way of like syncing things up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bell is pretty obvious.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, just like aside from saying meanwhile, back at the ranch,
it's in the background. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Salt Lake City's real neat.
Oh my gosh, the giraffes.
The giraffes, so cute.
You mean in a video game, right?
I've only ever been to their airport. It's a nice airport. I almost missed a plane because I ate a breakfast sandwich at one of their restaurants.
So I'm trying to think of what happens before you get to the giraffes. Oh, shit. Ellie's like really out of it.
Oh, yeah. She.
Yeah.
I thought that was weird. Like, I was really worried about that.
And then you go into the terrible mobile home with the parents.
Yeah.
The family photo. Yeah.
Well, okay, so it's got the family photo. Is that where she tries to give you the picture of Sarah?
No, that's later, after you see the giraffes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you go through, there's kind of the highway, mobile home is there. She's, like, really, really out of it, really distracted. She seems depressed or something.
She's giving, like, one-word answers to everything.
And the scene starts with her being called back to reality by Joel. Mm-hmm. Then, so you're trying to solve the puzzle, and she's not helping, so you yell at her.
Right.
Then she goes up and leaves you because she's really excited about something, and that's when you see the giraffes.
Right.
And that is this moment was the most emotionally impactful moment of the game for me.
Really?
Watching her watch the giraffes. It was this moment of complete like joy and beauty in a game that is slogging you through darkness.
Yeah.
Like just after all that they've been through, after all the horrible things that have happened, just seeing these giraffes walk across a reclaimed urban landscape and eat at trees, and seeing this girl that I care about be so happy and so absorbed in it. Like, I probably literally watched that screen for about 5 minutes.
Right.
Like, I did not, I was just frozen in that moment for a good long while.
So, surreal joy. I mean, it feels like the victory lap at this point. Like, you have no reason to believe that there's going to be anything more. You get to the, you know, you get to the fireflies and then you're done.
Like, yeah, it's like the this is all worth it moment.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, Ben, you not a fan of giraffes?
I have nothing against it. I just wasn't as impacted by it.
Let me write this down. Ben Merkel, nothing against giraffes. Okay, continue.
I did think the like bench sign for the giraffes was a funny foreshadowing of it.
Yeah.
Like when you're going to the city. Yeah. There's like a sign for the zoo, the Salt Lake City Zoo, and it's like, we have giraffes now.
It's a bench.
Oh, so I totally missed that.
Yeah, it's a bench ad, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was funny seeing them after that, where it's like, oh, okay, all right.
So, yeah.
I guess I was more impacted by finding a tool when I got down to the courtyard.
Oh, yeah. It's like,
yeah,
sweet.
Another tool.
And like, oh, wait, so there's probably going to be more combat after.
So then you go downstairs, and then she gives you the picture.
Yes. Yeah, she gives you the picture, and that's that was probably the most emotional moment for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. The more obvious one. But, you know, it's just, you know, that them recognizing the reality of their relationship, right?
Yeah. And this was a great moment. Joel's character was less well-spoken than I would have liked him to be. And it's totally in line with his character, the way he reacted and the way he, like, I forget what he says. It's something like, well, he's like kind of choked up, and he's like, well, I guess no matter how much you try to run from things, you can't. Or, you know.
Yeah.
Which, again, okay, yeah, he's the thuggish dude. He can't express himself that well, so it works. But
he's grown calluses.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And maybe by this point he sees Ellie as a complete surrogate. You know, like, he doesn't need Sarah anymore because he has a new daughter, right? Which makes the rest of it feel a little bit more, you know, cohesive, right?
Yeah. And I kind of see the up until Wyoming part of him, like, trying to figure out these new feelings that he's having, which are basically old feelings for what he had when he had a daughter, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, like, by the time he gets to Salt Lake City, I see it as him being like, all right, this is my new daughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is not necessarily a good thing, as you find out a half an hour from now in the video game.
Yeah. So between here and there is probably like the final exam for dealing with the infected. You don't really have to handle them anymore after this, but there's a very creepy, long highway tunnel that is just filled to the brim with every single kind of infected.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then
did you guys stealth it?
To a point.
I got Molotovs for days, dude. I was just using
this was the only area, I think, pretty much in the game. Oh, other than the dorms. This and the dorms were the only areas I was actually able to get completely through via stealth. And I thought it was hilarious because to get out of this final exam area, you have to have Ellie push this big crate down from on top of a semi.
Yeah.
So it lands with this huge thud that somehow doesn't set off every infected that you just snuck past. Yeah. Thanks, video games. Thanks.
Well, maybe it does, but they can't get to you because the tunnel's all blocked up.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. But then you get to the research center, and the question that has been in the back of my mind the whole time is brought up, which is,
what's going to happen to her mind?
Yeah.
Like, well, to be clear, you don't show up there of your own volition. She falls in the water. Yeah. This whole time she hasn't been able to swim, which we can just take a moment and acknowledge. We haven't talked about it yet. The Ellie floating water puzzles, just as bad as the ladder and plank puzzles. So,
I just appreciate, I like the animation each time, though, of her on the board.
Yeah, yeah, like her trying to keep her balance and stuff. That's super good.
Yeah.
But puzzles bad, animation good.
Yeah.
Anyway, she can't swim. She falls in the water. You dive in after her, rescue her, but she's unconscious. You're trying to save her. And the bad, I thought this was a really interesting conflict for me, of the bad guys are like, hands up. And you're like, nope, not going to happen.
Nope.
Saving a life. Mm-hmm. And so they knock you out.
Yeah.
So, that's right. Cause he's trying to give her mouth to mouth. Right.
Mm-hmm. And then you wake up in the hospital.
Yeah. Back to the puzzle thing, because I do want to touch on that briefly. At least it's better than climbing everywhere, right? I mean, right? I don't. Think of like the mirrors room in Uncharted 2, like with the giant dagger. I mean, I guess it fits like the theme of like it being an Indiana Jones type game or adventure or whatever.
Yeah,
but I would much rather like push someone around on a board. I guess I find that less annoying than hey, you need to climb a bunch in this room. Have fun.
It's definitely cool that those sequences are shorter. I think that the climbing doesn't bother me because it helps them be able to kind of create and then let you explore these really vertical environments.
Mm-hmm.
And then just you are rewarded with these different views and stuff as you go around.
I am kind of surprised that there was no climbing in this one, right? There's no bouldering, you know? And that's a mechanic they lean on so heavily in the Uncharted games, you know?
Yeah. In fact, in the puzzle right before you get to the sequence where everyone falls underwater, there's a place where you need a plank to, you know, put across, but it looks like you might be able to make the jump. So they must have had a lot of trouble with playtesting, because this first time you try to make the jump, there's he pops out of the water and he's like, well, there's no way I'm making that jump. Did you hear me? Don't try again.
They brought me into the studio to record this line.
Yeah.
It's a hospital.
Wake up in the hospital.
Yeah. Wake up in the hospital, and Marlene is there. She's made her way across the country faster than you have, despite being gut shot. I don't know.
Well, she came back from remarkably well.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, she basically explains, you know, Joel finally, like, just asks and raises the question, so how are you going to do that? Because the cordyceps grow in the brain. It's like, yeah, we're going to have to crack, we're going to have to crack our coconut open. Oh.
And this, I don't think I'm a fan of that.
Yeah.
this result had kind of been in the back of my head for the entire game. Like, it's one of those things where you think about it and you're like, yeah, that's the direction they could go.
Yeah. And I got the sense that Ellie was weird because she, you know, maybe if she didn't know that she was going to get her coconut popped open, she was uncertain about what was going to happen when she got there, either, you know, being separated from Joel or, you know, needing to make the sacrifice herself. You know, just it's real uncertain and their journey is coming to a close. So Ellie likely knew what she was getting into when she signed up for this. Right.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Smart. Maybe genre blindness.
Well, that, and she didn't really have a chance to, you know, second guess herself or fight, because I think that when they pulled her in, they, you know, resurrected her, kept her bound, and that there's no reason to believe this except for, you know, and either talked her into or against her will sedated her and put her in the pediatric OR. Right.
My thought was from when she woke up and her reaction when she woke up that she was unconscious the entire time from being underwater on the operating table to driving away.
Right.
Cause she's just like, what happened? And I feel like if she had been conscious at any point, she would have remembered being, you know, tied up or something like that, you know?
Right.
So, that's true. And he does explain visiting the fireflies to her.
But, yeah, so I think she had to have been down the entire time.
Right.
But go ahead.
I think it's a good gameplay choice on their if that was intentional on their parts, because, I mean, that sort of uncertainty kind of propels you as the player to be like, no, I need to stop this from happening because we need to at least talk it over before it happens. I didn't get to say goodbye yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you don't make the conclusion right from the beginning that I'm just going to take her away forever. Yeah, my motivation at that point was I need a chance to say goodbye. We need to talk this over first.
But eventually you're forced into having to kill to get there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're starting to mow your way through these really heavily armed Firefly guards.
Achievement unlocked. Automatic weapons.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's a last minute superpower kind of thing. They look and act remarkably similar to the military troops from the beginning of the game.
And this is where I started going rage mode and busted out the flamethrower.
Yep.
Yep.
I never used the flamethrower on anything that wasn't infected.
I told myself I was going to do that, and then they put my girl in danger. So
I think I used the flamethrower on one of the nurses, the innocent civilians.
That's an interesting piece, because for me, it was this perfect moment in the game, going back to the very beginning of that, you know, in the moment you don't really have a choice.
Right.
I burst in on that room, had my Tau sniper out. Or no, it's not the Tau sniper. That's what it is in Uncharted. The what is that called?
Hunting rifle?
No, one hit kill pistol.
Oh, it's like it's El Diablo or something like that.
Yeah, El Diablo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, had that. And just the first, you know, I had been in this rage mode of, you know, killing all these really heavily armed guys. And pop, perfect headshot on the first guy. Pop, blew the second guy into the back of the room. And then turned and see that the third guy is a doctor in scrubs that's just cowering in the corner.
Yeah.
And like, if I could go back and do it again, I probably would have gone through those doors and just waited to see what they would have done, or hope they all cower in a corner.
I tried waiting, but they force you to kill them.
Do they come after you, or do they come after Ellie?
If you get too close to Ellie, they like swipe at you with scalpels and stuff.
Really? Huh.
Yeah. I was going to say, that's interesting. Yeah, because I went and saw because there's an entire moment where, he holds up a scalpel and you have to kill the doctor, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that's a good... I think the choices they made at the end of the game, I'm glad that they forced you down a certain path.
Yeah.
So you don't have to kill all the doctors. That, like I said, that third one just cowers in a corner and told me I was a monster as I left. Mm-hmm. But it really reinforced that, as soon as the doors were open, I was, in full on killing mode. In the moment, I didn't feel like I had a choice.
Yeah. Like this is them taking the wedge and then, using the sledgehammer to drive the separation between player motivation and character motivation, which is, in your head, intellectually, you can understand why they need you to do this research, but you are acting through Joel, who is a person who, just absolutely cannot accept a reality in which Ellie is sacrificed for this. Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're forced to do something that you might not agree with, and Joel, sees as the only way to go forward. Right.
Yeah. All right. So this is going to be maybe a monstrous thing to say, but I could totally see myself getting to a fuck the world kind of place like that.
Yeah.
With someone that I cared about. I'm not a dad yet or anything like that, so I can't say for sure. But like, that is, if not something I would do, at least something that I could very powerfully relate to.
It's believable and they sell it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one thing I like to think about is how Children of Men is about a selfish person who becomes unselfish by the end and maybe or maybe not helps a girl. This story is about a man who starts out selfish and becomes even more selfish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And saves a girl at the end. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And, there's a lot that you can say about the way that this ends.
I also want to come back and challenge this. Do they ever conclusively say that they will be able to generate a cure from this?
No. Marlene just outright says this is, a shot in the dark. It is literally all that we have left. It's our only lead. And,
So that was, that was the other thing. And I listened very closely to the recordings of the doctors that they placed at in Colorado and in Salt Lake, listening for some guarantee that this was going to work. And it's not there.
Yeah. Like you get the sense that there would be no way that Joel would be able to reason with them and say, hey, maybe she's more useful alive than dead.
Okay. So I want to break story here. Say you were in this situation. And so I don't know who is dearest to you in each of your respective lives. Dennis will probably say Jen for you. Cole.
Probably.
I'll pass.
Yeah, I don't know who this would be in my life either. But but given this choice where you have to sacrifice someone you care about for the quote-unquote greater good but not even a guarantee, or just keep the person that you care about, which would you do?
You can't say until you're in that situation. Until you're in that incredibly that incredibly unlikely situation.
Until when you're in that situation, yes. Not if it's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I mean, this is one of those situations where my beliefs kind of draw a very clear path, and I think I would be much more at peace with saying goodbye to someone under these circumstances than maybe I would be otherwise. So I think I know what my choice would be, and I think that would be that I would have to say goodbye. But again, I was taken aback by how powerfully I related to what Joel chose to do.
Right. And the way that I looked at it and the way that I would probably see it there is that this entire game, this entire situation is showing how maybe mankind doesn't deserve to be saved. And Ellie was the only good thing that you had with you as you took this walk essentially across the entire land. And Joel wasn't ready to give that to give up the one good thing that he had in order to chase after an uncertainty. There is just this sense that humankind not only is broken by this, but has always been broken, and this just brought the worst out of it. And Joel selfishly saw himself as the person who was able to make that decision for everybody else and ensured that they would be the last of humankind.
Yeah.
And I agree with all that line of thinking. I would say I don't think Joel thought anything beyond that.
Oh,
my girl
no.
is in danger. Like that, his thinking never got to that point.
Yeah. So I guess I'm thinking more about like what that speaks to in the grander narrative of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is a good point that you bring up. Is they basically do a countrywide tour of man's inhumanity to man, and right. then monsters yeah. inhumanity to man. But yeah, that's a good point. That Ellie is totally the best part of the entire game, and mm-hmm. so. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, like at that point in his head, he is thinking, you know, I don't want her to die. She's my daughter. I don't want, you know, I can't lose somebody again. This is everything that I feared this entire way through. And I delivered her right into the hands of this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And then hello, parallelism, as you make your escape.
Yeah. Marlene starts the game gut shot and ends the game gut shot.
And you start the game carrying your daughter through the streets.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You end the game carrying your daughter through the streets. Yeah. Well, hallways, I guess.
Through the parking garage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fun fact, Marlene's voice actor, also Alex Vance from Half-Life.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Wow.
Hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, you're carrying Ellie through, and I love the way that it ends. Oh my god.
Yeah.
It's such like a Breaking Bad kind of moment, you know, which is you know, Ellie doubts everything that you're saying about what happened there. And she asks you to lie to her,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know, or asks yeah. like, you know, just like what happened there. I can't be sure. Everything that we worked for, blah, blah, blah. This just doesn't make any sense. It doesn't add up. And I forget exactly what she asked him. What did she ask him?
Swear to me that everything you told me about Utah or something like that was true. Mm-hmm. And you can see there's this moment of real, it's like almost his face says, sorry, I can't. And then he does.
Right.
And it's like, man, this story stays exactly as small as it should.
Yeah. And I just love that this is the direction that they took it.
Yeah.
It's great. Because they could have just had it be like, you know, he ends the game.
Do you choose to save her?
Yeah. They save the girl, press one. To save the world, press two.
To save humanity, press zero.
Yeah.
Should have had a motion control sub game to get the tumor out of her brain without killing her.
They ported
over to the Wii.
They absolutely could have done any number of cliche things, but they give you what is categorically a bad ending.
Yeah.
They could have had it end like it began with, you know, him losing his other daughter and trying to move on or something, but like
categorically bad for humanity on a grand scale.
Yeah, I guess that's what I mean. Like
I don't know about good for Ellie. Definitely, I mean good for Joel.
he is ensnaring her. He is trying to maintain his control over her with deceit. You know, his attachment, keeping her subservient or whatever. I don't know. It's a real weird power kind of thing, which is I will be your dad forever.
It almost takes it back to David, the cannibal. Like, okay, now I can start drawing parallels between, you know, keeping control over her, you know, and that whole section. So,
yeah.
And then, so the other thing is they go back to this town. It's an entire town that's got electricity, got safety to a relative extent, other than some bandits. You could make the argument that, yeah, that's only going to last temporarily, and eventually that's going to come crashing down just like the other person's settlement did, right, in the sewers. But at least for the moment, it looks like there might be some chance of normalcy and stability and humanity.
Yeah, because it's fundamentally a different society there than other places that you've seen, right?
Yeah. Well, and again, I don't know how different it was than the sewer city, and you just came to it a little bit earlier.
I suppose that's right. Yeah.
I think this is kind of pointing into a new direction of gaming, though, where it's not necessarily a good choice to give you a happy ending or a fulfilling ending. Like I think video games are starting to follow the point of movies, or, you know, like what movies have done before, where it's better to give you an ending that's like true and have you think about it and ask questions about it. You know, like that, I feel like that's ultimately more fulfilling.
Yeah. And
I feel like BioShock Infinite is similar to this game in that regard, as far as they give you a character that you're not supposed to project yourself onto. It's a very defined character that at a lot of points you're supposed to disagree with. And kind of the ending being an extent of what the character is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't even know. It's haunting. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much better than Mass Effect 3's ending.
it's less emotionally manipulative. You know, it's...
What do you mean?
Well, no, I just, like, it doesn't pander to you the way that Mass Effect does. This game does not pander to the player.
Yeah, it's...
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, everything comes back to that chasm between character motivation and player motivation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like how that difference acts as this engine for all the things that happen in this last act.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So do we have any kind of like final wrap up thoughts about the game in general?
I don't know if I could pin it down to one.
Yeah.
Final closing thoughts. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm just really like happy for Naughty Dog because it's like to come from Uncharted to this. Because, like, don't get me wrong, Uncharted 2 is a great game. But at the end of the day...
No, you said Uncharted 2, not Uncharted 3.
Yeah, no, I do not like Uncharted 3. I could rant about that, but I will not waste people's time. You know, but at the end of the day, Uncharted 2 is just an adventure game. And it's an Indiana Jones type game where... You know, there's a lot of like hokiness, and there's not really a lot of value you can get for it, narrative wise, I guess. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of cool moments. They still have a lot of cool moments in The Last of Us, but it's a totally more interesting world that they created, and the characters are much more three dimensional than the characters in Uncharted.
Have they announced a Naughty Dog game for PS4?
No, I don't believe.
I think they're working on an Uncharted game for PS4. I believe.
All right, we won't go there.
It's real quick to look this up, so I can kind of see. Yeah, there's nothing on their Wikipedia for something after The Last of Us. So
okay, I'm watching with great anticipation. If it's one tenth the game that The Last of Us is, I will still enjoy it quite a lot.
Yeah, this game does an awesome job of evoking desperation, which is, you know, the survival horror blog is even closer to fruition than it's ever been. I've designed a logo; it's real cool. I've got the list mostly together, but you know, desperation and mood and tone, those are all things that video games can do really well. It's something that this game does especially well in order to sell kind of the experience to you. And I just think it's exceptional in that regard.
Yeah. It's great how the mechanics match what the atmosphere of the game is and reinforce the themes of the game.
Right.
This was something I was talking with you about, Cole, earlier, is how like that was something where Bioshock Infinite kind of fell flat on, is the mechanics of the game are the same as the first one, but neither really have anything to do with the world that you inhabit in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Ben, I need to send you an episode of Extra Credits. They spend a lot of time talking about that.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's neither here nor there.
Cool. So do we want to button it up?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Dennis, did you have any final thoughts?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I feel like me and Cole went on tirades. You have to do a tirade now. Yeah.
No.
You said you couldn't narrow it down.
Go listen to the last 3 hours. God, it's 3 hours.
Yeah.
Go listen to the last three hours. That's about as close to a final thought as I can get.
Okay, like, so we did a 3-hour podcast about Final Fantasy VII. This week, there's so like our poor listeners. I cut you off. I apologize. But go listen to the previous 3 hours. Continue.
Yeah, that's about as close to a final thought as I can get. And I wouldn't say our poor listeners, you guys are welcome.
Yeah.
all three of you that are still listening.
Oh, man. So I don't really want to do an admin thing because people who've listened this far, they probably are already fans. But check us out on iTunes. Leave us a rating or review if you like this. That's the biggest way to contribute to the effort. Other shows on the network, everything is at duckfeed.tv. Yep. I think it's all real good. Go ahead, Ben.
Give us some feedback on what you think of The Last of Us, too, if you beat it. Try and keep it spoiler free, I guess, but or I don't know, somehow privately message the level. Mm-hmm. You could do that, right?
Yeah.
We'll
read your mail. Yeah, go ahead and go to duckfeed.tv/contact and put it in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then difia.tv/tipjar. If you feel like monetarily supporting the network, you can buy stuff off of Amazon, and we get a little cut of that. That helps support, you know, hosting the show and then and the website and everything. So, yeah. Twitter then out.
Yeah.
Cool. I am at Cole Ross, KOLERROSS on Twitter.
I am Dennis Furia, at D Furia on Twitter.
Ben Merkel, at Merkelizer on Twitter.
All right. And don't kill him because he looks like a fun guy.
Waka, waka, waka.
I got a belly laugh out of Dennis. I like that.
You were waiting all episode for that.
I've been waiting like 4 weeks for that.
You played Chrono Cross, right?
Oh, I love Chrono Cross.
Remember Fun Guy?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. No, I need to go to bed when I'm laughing at that.
Yeah. That's a dad fucking joke right there. I told them to get Cheer Free back on the fucking market. I had to switch to all free and clear. Do you want? I'm an animal, okay?
Yeah, you like, might as well just be wallowing.
I might as well just piss on my clothes. I might as well just piss on my clothes. That's how they used to do it in Frontier days. Kept it white, right. They said. So
this has been our episode on The Last of Us. Thanks for listening.
I don't know how to segue from that at all. So
Captain, I'll put a marker there.
Yeah, people will do anything to survive. Hey, saying of which.
Speaking of which, clean clothes are important.